Welcome to Art Bell, Somewhere in Time. Tonight featuring Coast to Coast AM from March 15th, 2002.
From the high desert in the great American Southwest, I bid you good evening, good morning, good afternoon, whatever the case may be, in all 24 time zones covered by Coast to Coast AM. I'm Art Bell. Great to be here. It's Friday night, Saturday morning, everybody. In the next hour, Dr. Brian Weiss, who is one of the, you know, there's only one real, ultimately important question for every single one of us alive, and that is, what happens when we die? And the answers range all the way from not a thing, the worms crawl in and the worms crawl out, to heaven, or hell, and then a small range of additional possibilities involving being bound to earth as a ghost and that sort of thing. But there's one other really big one out there that deserves examination, and that's reincarnation. It's not something we talk a lot about here, but tonight we're going to. Dr. Brian Weiss is one of the world's experts on reincarnation. I had viewed him many, many years ago on Dreamland, and now we'll have the honor to do so again. He's really something. You're going to enjoy this. I know I am. It is the biggest question we all have. Lesser items, but nevertheless, I suppose, important. Today, an interceptor rocket smashed into a dummy warhead 140 miles over the Pacific Friday night in the, count it, folks, the fourth successful test of part of the planned U.S. missile defense system. The interceptor, launched from a tiny Pacific island near the equator, destroyed the dummy warhead at 9:41 p.m. Now, the test was the sixth of a prototype of ground-based missile defense system. The interceptor successfully destroyed the dummy warhead in three of the previous five tests, including the most recent in December. The military also developed ship-based radar and other types of anti-missile systems. Now, the military launched the target missile from Vandenberg Air Force Base in California at 9:11 p.m. Interceptor took off from Mech Island in Kwajalein Atoll at 9:32 p.m., then collided with a dummy warhead in space 9 minutes later. Friday's test was yet the most complex of its kind. The dummy missile jettisoned three balloons to try to fool the interceptor, but our interceptor was not fooled and destroyed the right target. Now, a lot of people have problems with this program. It's going to cost a lot of money, for one thing. $23 billion. $64 billion by the year 2015. Now, critics, including, of course, China and Russia, and, you know, our potential enemies. I don't know if Russia... Russia is still a potential enemy. You'd have to put them in that class, wouldn't you? You never know, right? They're suggesting that it will destabilize everything because they'll just have to look at ways to defeat it, including sending so many missiles that we couldn't possibly knock them down, so we're going to spend a lot of money for something relatively easily defeated. The other side of the coin is a rogue nation launching a missile, which is probably more likely than World War III. There, such a defense system would be pretty important. And I would imagine there would be a lot of questions if one of our cities, one of our big cities, was incinerated in a nuclear nightmare and we, you know, some rogue nation. And by the way, I hear that we're preparing nuclear weapons right now, that we're adopting some new kind of policy about nuclear weapons. And apparently it would allow for their use in the new kind of situation that we face right now after September 11th. So, I don't know fully what that means, but it sounds a little bit ominous, especially if you're one of the Bulletin of Atomic Scientists, the guy who's got his hand on the clock up there. The father of two accused September 11 hijackers has denied that his sons were terrorists, but said in a TV interview Friday that he would never forgive them should it be true that they are. That would be two of his sons. Now, he's a prominent real estate developer. said he's seen no proof his sons were involved. I wonder if he's tried to contact them lately. A jury rejected the death penalty, handed rather the life sentence to Andrea Yates. I guess you know that by now, huh? That the tormented mother who drowned her five children in a bathtub. And in a way, I think it's more of an appropriate sentence than a death sentence. It was truly a horrible thing she did. Mentally with it or not. And if the answer is not, and I believe it to be not, because nobody mentally sane would do such a thing, then we don't need to be executing people like that. Plus, if she's kept in jail to think about what she has done for the rest of her life, that's probably a more hellish sentence than death, don't you think? U.S. and Canadian troops found a cache of mortars, grenades, and rockets Friday as they scoured the mountains of eastern Afghanistan for any escaping Al-Qaeda, and Taliban fighters who fled the U.S. offensive. Now, as far as I know, we are fairly bereft of finding any of the big guys, the ones close to our number one enemy, nor have we discovered his DNA yet, although they, you know, continue to gather DNA. Nevertheless, he's been marginalized as an enemy of the U.S. That was our latest statement. Again, I believe that statement to be kind of a perhaps conditioning for all of us to accept that marginalizing him is the next best thing to killing him. And I suppose in a way it is. Still, killing him would be good. Maybe. There are many who would say, maybe we'll know he's dead and we'll never say anything. In other words, what do you think we would do? Being afraid of the retribution of escalating Osama bin Laden's martyrdom to the very top of the heap of martyrs, that might not be a good thing, and it might be that if we killed him, we'd better keep it quiet and let it be a mystery, and he would just never be heard from again. It'd be something you tell the American people another 10 or 20 years. Yeah, we got him. But you wouldn't say it now. Because that would likely generate all sorts of attempts at satisfying the debt, you know, which could be bad news. So I don't know, that's worth a little thought. Well, here's one you're going to really love. This is one I've been telling you about for years, and I always get stories like this. And the headline is, this is, so you know, it's a mainstream New Scientist. The headline is, asteroid buzzes Earth from blind spot. Now, blind spot here is in quotes. One of the largest asteroids known to have approached the Earth zipped past about 450,000 kilometers away on March 8th, but nobody recorded it until 4 days later. The object, now called 2002 EM7, was very hard to spot because it was moving outward from the innermost point of its orbit, 87 million kilometers from the Sun. You see, when it passed closest to the Earth, just 1.5 times the distance to the Moon, it was too close to the Sun to be visible. Asteroids approaching from this blind spot can't be seen by astronomers. If a previously unknown object passed through this zone on a collision course with Earth, it would not be identified until it was too late for any intervention. Are you listening? We could have all died 4 days ago. Astronomers have made numerous calls in recent years for more funds to catalog near-Earth objects and refine their orbits. This would reduce the number of unknown objects that could catch us unaware, giving early warning of potential future collisions. So, this one has, 323-day orbit that takes it as far as 188 million kilometers from the Sun. Now, it's between 50 and 100 meters across, making it larger than the object that it exploded in 1908 over Tunguska. So, I'm used to these kinds of stories. In this case, we found out 4 days after the fact that we could have really been slammed hard, or if could have been slammed hard. That was very, very close. And when do we find out 4 days later? Why? Because it comes from the blind spot. Incidentally, it could be that we were seeing this interceptor thing tonight, but Prescott, Arizona is reporting bright, glowing, moving, then apparently vaporizing something or another, leaving smoke rings, secondary smoke sighting on ridgeline, seen by many, many cars pulling over, that kind of thing. Now, this claims it was 7:15 p.m., which would not coincide with the launch. So I'm not sure what we've got there. I'll need more people emailing me, telling me what they have seen. But there is a bit of flap going on there. More news about this stinking rash coming up in a moment.
Streamlink, the audio subscription service of Coast to Coast AM, has a new name, Coast Insider. You'll still get all the same great features for the same low price, just 15 cents a day when you sign up for 1 year. The package includes podcasting, which offers the convenience of having shows downloaded automatically to your computer or MP3 player, and the iPhone app with live and on-demand programs. You'll also get our amazing download library of 3 full years of shows. Just think, as a new subscriber, over 1,000 shows will be available for you to collect, enjoy, and listen to at your leisure. Plus, you'll get streamed and on-demand broadcasts of Art Bell's Somewhere in Time shows and 2 weekly classics. And as a member, you'll have access to our monthly live chat sessions with George Norrie and special guests. If you're a fan of Coast, you won't want to be without Coast Insider. Visit coasttocoastam.com to sign up today. Looking for the truth? You'll find it on Coast to Coast AM with George Norrie.
I really believe that my role is to inform people, to try to bring them the truth. Yes, this is a program where we have some fun, and sometimes it's very, very unusual and strange. But I want them to understand what's happening in the world around them, whether it's climate change, economy, war, and the reasons for all these things. So that's what I think my mission is.
Now we take you back to the night of March 15th, 2002, on Art Bell, Somewhere in Time.
Well, I'm just getting hundreds and hundreds, thousands actually, of emails about this rash. Here are two wire service stories. This one, not wire service, New York Post. 25 students and staff at Fort Hamilton High School in Brooklyn have become the latest victims of rashes breaking out in schools, and the cause remains a mystery, authorities said yesterday. City Health Department and Board of Education officials said students exhibited, quote, in quotes, slight rashes, itching, and swollen eyes yesterday and Monday. The officials said the rashes, appearing as red spots on arms, are not contagious, and the school there remains open. Not so, though, in Connecticut. Local health department officials are saying no need to panic after 70 students and 2 teachers at, it's Harwinton Consolidated Schools contracted a rash that closed the school today. The rash, similar to others reported elsewhere in Connecticut, and now they say you'll notice throughout the nation, developed quickly. It had a quick onset, and the number of cases climbed to 70, but 70 by the end of the day. Both the Torrington Area Health District and the Connecticut Department of Public Health were called in to investigate the outbreak. Now, of course, they still have no real idea what's doing this. But it's everywhere. Even though they're now admitting that it's nationwide, I'm saying it's more than that. With the amount of mail that I'm getting on this subject, there is something out there. that, let's see, hits masses of people at one time, 70, 80 people at a time, and they get these rashes. And in most cases, they go away. But the little worrisome thing here is that you don't really know what it is that you just got. And I suppose what they're not telling you is that it could be something else. In other words, something now, sort of a reaction to whatever it is, and then something else could come along later. It's kind of like a pre-earthquake, you know? You never know, there could be a bigger earthquake later, right? Pretty good analogy. That's worrisome. You know, it's happening across the whole country. Maybe it'll turn out to be milk, you know, some common denominator like that, but right now, you just don't know. Got a series of things that I would like to read you here. This is a list of the top 8 morons. Now, who constructs, you know, lists like this? I have no idea. But the top 8 morons. 1. Will the real dummy please stand up? AT&T fired President John Walter after 9 months, saying that he lacked intellectual leadership. He received a $26 million severance package. Perhaps it's suggested it is not Walter who's lacking intelligence. Lacked intellectual leadership, and they handed him $26 million. With a little help from our friends, police in Oakland, California spent 2 hours attempting to subdue a gunman who had barricaded himself inside his house. After firing 10 tear gas canisters, officers discovered that the man in question was standing beside them in the police line, shouting, "Please come out and give yourself up." So he was out there cheering himself on. This one's entitled, "What Was Plan B?" An Illinois man pretending to have a gun kidnapped a motorist and forced him to drive to 2 different automated teller machines, wherein the kidnapper proceeded to withdraw money from his own bank accounts. This is called the getaway. A man walked into a Topeka, Kansas quick stop, and asked for all the money in the cash drawer. Apparently the take was too small, so he tied up the store clerk and worked the counter himself for 3 hours until police showed up and grabbed him. He was selling as much as he could. This is entitled, "Did I Say That?" Police in Los Angeles had good luck with a robbery suspect who just could not control himself during a lineup. Get this. When detectives asked each man in the lineup to repeat the words, "Give me all your money or I'll shoot," the man shouted, "That's not what I said." This one's called, "Are We Communicating?" A man spoke frantically into the phone. "My wife is pregnant, and her contractions are only 2 minutes apart." "Is this her first child?" the doctor asked. "No," the man said, "this is her husband." In Modesto, California, a Stephen Richard King was arrested for trying to hold up a Bank of America branch without a weapon. King used a thumb and a finger to simulate a gun, but unfortunately he failed to keep his hand in his pocket. So he brought out the finger gun, I guess, and that was his undoing. And now the grand finale. Last summer, down on Lake Isabella, located in the high desert, an hour east of Bakersfield, California, some folks new to boating were having a problem. No matter how hard they tried, they just couldn't get their brand new 22-foot going. It was sluggish in almost every single maneuver, no matter how much power was applied. After about an hour of trying to make it go, they pulled to a nearby marina, you know, thinking somebody there might be able to tell them what they were doing wrong. A thorough topside check revealed that everything was in perfect working condition. The engine was running fine. The outdrive went up, and down, as it should. The prop was the correct size and pitch, so one of the marina guys, I guess in desperation, jumped into the water to check under the boat. He came up choking on water. He was laughing so hard. Now remember, this is true. Under the boat, still securely strapped in place, was the trailer. Now, you just know that your speedboat is not going to, it's not going to do real well with the trailer being hauled along underneath it. And you can imagine the poor guy who dove under there, got all the way under, as still holding his breath, to be greeted by the sight of the entire trailer under the boat. I mean, you can imagine. He would begin cracking up. He would begin losing air and have to rise quickly to the surface. Open lines coming right up. And then Brian Weiss. Dr. Brian Weiss at the top of the hour on reincarnation.
You're listening to Art Bell, Somewhere in Time, on Premier Radio Networks. Tonight, an encore presentation of Coast to Coast AM from March 15th, 2002.
But he left me much too soon, his lady bird. He left his lady bird. Lady bird, come on down. I'm here waiting on the ground. Lady bird, I'll treat you good.
Band is blowing Dixie, double fall time. You feel alright when you hear the music ring. Well, now you step inside, but you don't see too many faces.
Coming in out of the rain, they hear the jazz go down.
Competition in other places, but the horn is blowing that sound way on down south. Guitar George, he knows all the chords.
You're listening to Art Bell, Somewhere in Time. Tonight featuring a replay of Coast to Coast AM from March 15th, 2002.
Just one more little item for you here. It's called The Fifth Floor. A group of girlfriends went on a vacation during which they see a five-story hotel with a sign that reads, "For Women Only." Oh. Since they were without their boyfriends, they decide to go in. The doorman, a very attractive guy, explains how it all works. He says, "We've got five floors. Go up floor by floor. Once you find what you're looking for, you can stay there. It's easy to decide because each floor has a sign telling you what's inside." So they start going up. First floor sign reads, "All the men here are horrible lovers, but they are sensitive and kind." The friends laugh and without hesitation move on to the next floor. The sign on the second floor reads, "All the men here are wonderful lovers, but generally treat women badly." That wasn't going to do, so up they go. Third floor. Sign there says, "All the men here are great lovers and sensitive to the needs of women." Now, this was good, but still, there are two floors yet above. So on the fourth floor, where the sign was absolutely perfect, it read, "All the men here have perfect builds, are sensitive and attentive to women, are perfect lovers. They are also single, rich, and straight." The women seem very pleased, but they decide that they'd rather see what the fifth floor has to offer before they settle for the fourth. When they reach the fifth floor, all that's there is a sign that reads, "There are no men here. This floor was built only to prove there is no way to please a woman."
Now we take you back to the night of March 15th, 2002, on Art Bell, Somewhere in Time.
Oh, by the way, kind of a cute picture of our Yeti on the website webcam. If you go to the webcam, I adjusted it so the focus was a little bit closer and got Yeti pretty close to the screen. That's kind of a cute picture. And you'll notice his whiskers are definitely longer than mine. All right, to the phones we go. Now, listen, top of the hour, Dr. Brian Weiss, serious stuff. If you really are curious about what happens to us, or at least one of the major options that's out there that looks like it might be real that occurs to us when we die, this program will be of intense interest to you. He's a very serious researcher. First time caller line, you're on the air. Hello.
Hi.
Hi.
I'm in Chino Valley, Arizona. My name's David.
Okay.
And at 7:10 p.m., I saw something that was... seemed particularly odd in the sky. Me and my mom were going outside to go to a Chinese restaurant, and I noticed this bright white light that was moving up in the sky, and it had this kind of, it was weird. It looked like it had a cloud surrounding it, and it was shining light through it, but it wasn't a cloud. It must have been a light that was just so bright that it seemed like a cloud, and it had this wide light that was reaching down from under it, and it seemed to be streaming down, but it wasn't quite touching the ground.
Okay, what time is it there where you are now?
Right now,
yes.
It's about 11:40.
11:40.
Yeah.
So you're plus 1 hour from me. They launched from Vandenberg at 9:11. 9:11 p.m. Now, it's possible that's what you saw.
A missile?
A missile.
Nuclear or conventional?
Well, this was a test, you see. In other words, they fire a missile from Vandenberg. It heads out across the Pacific. Then they fire another one from Kwajalein, and they try and knock the first one out of space. Kaboom. And they did that.
A flage vehicle.
So it may be that that's what you saw, but the times don't seem quite right.
But that's not just it. That's not only what happened.
What else?
Also, shut up. Also, it seemed that it disappeared into a cloud of dust when it seemed to explode. And then later, a few minutes later, this white bulge started to appear over the horizon, this white light, and it started growing. And it got to a certain size, and once it did, it started getting these very, very bright colors. These, like, red, blue, green,
yellow,
purple. And it started getting bigger, and it was still just barely above the horizon. And it kind of started getting in this UFO shape. And then we got behind these buildings and trees to fill up on gas. And then when we came out back again, it was completely gone. But what was in place later was this weird spiral-shaped white light.
Boy, that sure does sound like a launch and maybe an interception. I don't know how you could have seen the interception. Well, it did occur in space, so you might have. That might be what this is all about. I don't know. Listen, I appreciate the description. Trust me when I tell you, a lot of people in your area have seen the same thing. I don't know why it would have been visible, particularly from where you are, if that's what it was that we're talking about here. So, by the way, who'd you tell to shut up there?
His mom. What time was that?
That was... He told you to shut up?
Yeah, yes, I'm sorry, he did.
No, he shouldn't do that. You tell him I said he shouldn't do that.
He can hear you.
Okay, good. So you saw it too?
Yes, we both did.
All right. Well, listen, bless your heart. I'm getting a million reports, so we'll try and figure out exactly what it is everybody's seen. Thank you.
It was 7:10 Arizona time.
Okay. Well, the launch was 9:11, and unfortunately, they don't specify the time here, but that, it wouldn't jive.
That's what I'm saying, 9:11 what, California time or what?
Well, I don't know. They've got 9:11 in here. They say 9:11 p.m. was the launch. Now, they don't say... a lot of times they write these stories and they do it East Coast time, so I'm not sure. You would think they'd do it California time, 9:11. That would make it a 1 hour difference to you, which is not right, because we're talking 2 hours here.
Right.
So, thank you very much. I think, this is going to be hard. If it's going to be hard because the times don't jive on the one hand. They just don't jive. They're close in the minutes, but off in the hours. I don't know. Wildcard line, you're on the air. Hello.
Hello.
Yes, sir.
Hi, this is Alan. I'm calling from Mesa, Arizona.
Yes, sir.
And I would just like to concur with what you just heard. There was a visit that my significant other and I had going to meet a couple at their home for supper. And this also occurred around 7:10 p.m. Arizona time, as stated. The description is quite accurate as to what I would say. I would also say, though, that we did not turn our eyes from this object at all, and it actually did appear to be a craft that actually dematerialized right in front of our eyes into the cloud. and it was gone, and there was no sound, there was no smell, there was nothing, just complete silence. This object seemed to be coming around the Goldfield mountain range and appeared to be, within a mile to 2 miles from us.
That would not be the missile launch.
I did not get the impression that this was something that we were seeing from Western Phoenix or from California. I did not get the impression that this was something high in the atmosphere. This appeared close.
Gotcha.
Yeah, this appeared quite close.
How big, if you were to describe it, you know, people usually use the, if you hold your thumb out at arm's length or your hand out at arm's length, or how big was it?
Yeah. Well, you know, we talked about that, and because of its apparent closeness, if it happened to be a commercial jet, it would have probably appeared larger than this craft. So I think that this craft was smaller than a commercial jet airliner. And
then your thumb out at arm's length would have covered it?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, it would have. Yeah.
Right.
It was something that we've never seen before. We've done quite a bit of reading and have read previous reports about dematerialization of alien craft in clouds. And
you're pretty sure this wasn't a missile launch or an interception?
No, not at all.
And the times don't jive, and you stand by the same time and same description as the...
Right. That's right, because I placed a call to the person that we were going to meet and told him that we were just a minute or two away. And it was specifically 7:10 p.m. when that call was made.
Gotcha. Thank you very much, sir. Take care. All right. Well, obviously, we've got a situation on our hands here. The minutes just about match with regard to the launch. But what they're describing does not match the launch. And you would certainly think that others would have seen it, had a much better vantage point to see it than down in Arizona, wouldn't you? East of the Rockies, you're on the air. Hello.
Hello?
Yes.
Hi, Art. This is Rita from Rochester, New York.
Hey, Rita.
Hi. I'd like to see one of these things that these people are talking about all the time. I never have, but then I keep my drapes closed at night, too. I'll try to be as concise as possible. There are a few things I would like to discuss with you.
Yes.
First of all, you're shortening my life. I've been with you about 6 years or so, and often stay up all night until the very end, and I'm 71, and I can't lose that much sleep, but
I can't turn you off.
Now,
listen to me. There's good news for you.
Yes?
Recent medical discovery is people who sleep too much die sooner. That's right. And I want all my listeners to bear that in mind. Sleep too damn much, and you're going to die sooner. Listen to this show and live.
All right, then I'll live to be 150. The next thing is, I believe it was last night or maybe the night before, you were discussing that you had never seen any pictures. I guess you got one recently of the plane that hit the Pentagon.
I got one.
One. Well, when that terrible tragedy happened on that infamous day, and they showed pictures of the plane which crashed in Pennsylvania.
Yes.
My first reaction was, where's the plane? you saw nothing at all but a dent in the ground. Not a piece of any kind.
Yeah, I remember the photos.
Yeah, and the same thing occurred to me. Somebody, a caller, I guess, mentioned last night that maybe it vaporized. I don't know if such things happen, but that plane in Pennsylvania was just gone, and I don't think the ground was that marshy that it could have sunk all the way through, not to be seen anymore.
Well, I think there are interesting questions surrounding both of these, but particularly the Pentagon. I've had probably 500 pictures so far. And here's the deal. Every one of them showed either the impact or the, you know, where the hole is after the impact. I've got them with the fire plume. I've got a million pictures, but I've only got one photo with a piece of an airplane or what even appears to be a piece of an airplane, and it's small. So I still think that they were airplanes, hon. I believe that it's true. It's just it's kind of an interesting thing.
Mm-hmm. The next thing is, could you tell me, us maybe, why the announcer never gives the number where tapes can be ordered? Aren't you?
Oh, they do.
Are tapes not available anymore?
Oh no, well, they are.
No,
they
I've never heard. I lost the number.
Oh, unfortunately. Well, let's see. Do I have it? I've got it here somewhere. I will try and get the number for you and put it on the air. How's that?
Okay.
All right.
And lastly,
yes.
I miss Gordon Michael Scallion, and I enjoyed Robert Ghostwolf. My favorite is Dr. Kaku, and also Ed Dames and Father Martin.
Okay. Thank you. Thank you very much, Father Martin. We've got to rely on replays for that one, unfortunately, sadly. West of the Rockies, you're on the air. Hello.
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 Hi, Art.
Hi.
My name's Daryl. I'm from Glendale, Arizona.
Yes.
My husband and I got off the bus going up 43rd Avenue North at Glendale. It was somebody asked the bus driver, "What time is it?" He said 7:15.
Yes.
We went to walk over to the Food City. Heading straight west, straight down Glendale Avenue, my husband says, "Oh, look." And it was a bright white light. If you were to compare it to something, it would be about the size of the full moon.
Okay.
There was a haze around it. There was, like, hazy rays of light going down to the ground. They were just, like, white. It was there for about 20 seconds. The light kind of tipped up a little bit and then just disappeared in like a cloud of smoke or whatever, you know. There were no clouds at all. There were no clouds whatsoever. And the cloud just kind of bigger and bigger.
Ma'am, do you think you were seeing a missile launch?
No. No, I've seen missile launches on TV. That wasn't no missile launch.
Okay, I appreciate the report. Obviously, something has occurred in Arizona. And I'm trying to think myself why Arizona would have had a good view of something that I'm not sure was a good view here. And we see very good views of anything launched at Vandenberg from where I am. So, I don't know, all these reports are coming from Arizona, and the people are talking as though it's a local event. The times don't jive, and so I'm not sure what to make of what we've got here. First time caller line, you're on the air. Hello.
Art?
Turn your radio off, please.
I'm sorry.
No, that's all right.
Hi. My name is Alexandra. I am in Las Vegas.
Oh, yes.
And have you got any reports from Las Vegas seeing lights of the same kind they said that they've seen in Phoenix?
No, but if Las Vegas also saw them, then I'm drifting more toward the missile explanation.
We saw them. We live in Summerlin, which is in the right below the hills.
Right.
And it was right over Red Rock.
Okay, over Red Rock.
Yeah.
View over Red Rock. Okay.
We saw it at 6:15.
At 6:15. Now, Okay, 6:15. See, this launched from Vandenberg at 9:11. And if they're quoting East Coast times here, which they frequently do, that would make absolute sense. I'm thinking this is a missile launch. It's the interception, I believe. Do you have any absolute reason to believe it is not?
It didn't look like a missile launch. it just didn't look like a missile launch. It kind of seemed like it hovered in the sky for a while, and then it looked like it was coming towards us. It didn't look like it was that far away. And then it rose, and then...
Okay, but if you're saying 6:11, then the list here is 9:11. We don't have much of a dispute any longer because this would have been East Coast time. It coincides exactly.
Where did that launch off from?
Vandenberg.
Well, I'm not sure where that is.
And the direct, it's west, basically, to you. So you were looking in the right direction. If you were looking toward Red Rock, you were looking in the right direction. That would have been the launch direction.
Right. This was at, I didn't see the exact time. But then afterwards, we were heading towards dinner, and I saw this other grouping of lights, and then we saw this spiral of light. We sat there and watched that for about 10 or 15
minutes. Launches typically produce a spiral effect, and a lot of times with rainbow-like colors. I've sat and watched the launches from Vandenberg many times here.
Is that after the launch this spiral effect happens?
Yes, the spiral effect, of course, because, you know, by then it's just about dark out, right? It's just about the perfect time to observe. It's twilight, which means that up there where the missile is, it's in full sunlight. And so the trail it's leaving, which does leave multiple color swirls. Is that what you saw?
Did you see colors in the swirls? Yes.
Yes. Okay, I'm laying money on the fact that what we've got reported here is the launch from Vandenberg and the successful destruction, I might add, of that missile that you saw launched. And it threw out three decoys, and they nailed it anyway. How do you feel about the U.S. developing space-based defenses like this? Good idea or bad?
I'm not sure. My heart's just broken because I thought I saw a UFO.
Well, you did. You saw something totally unidentified, right? Until just now, anyway. Anyway, we'll continue to monitor these reports, and if it turns out to not coincide time-wise, nor be the launch, then we will investigate further. But right now... my money goes on the launch.
You're listening to Art Bell, Somewhere in Time. Tonight featuring a replay of Coast to Coast AM from March 15, 2002.
Bedra is my name.
Premier Radio Networks presents Art Bell, Somewhere in Time. Tonight's program originally aired March 15th, 2002.
Confirming for you, that was a missile launch you all saw. The missile, in fact, did launch at about 6:11 Pacific time. Now, to me, this story that I hold in my hands about the missile launch, quoting the missile launch time at 9:11 p.m., and talking about Vandenberg Air Force Base, is another example of East Coast media elitism. They don't even bother to tell us that's East Coast time they're talking about. It's elitism. They ought to at least every now and then use Pacific time, or at least say it's Eastern time so the rest of us can compute. Anyway, good powers of observation. That's what you all saw, was a missile and interception, I might add, a successful destruction of a missile launched from Vandenberg. Whether you saw the launch itself only or saw the interception, which seems unlikely, that was over Kwajalein, though you could have, that, folks, is indeed what you saw. Now, coming up, the greatest question that mankind can have, what happens when you die? Is it the, there are only a few choices, as I said earlier, there's the worms crawl in, worms crawl out, it's all over routine. Then there's heaven and hell. And then there's the possibility of reincarnation. And there are probably one or two others, but, you know, basically the options boil down to that. Is it the big blackness, the big nothing, the big sleep? Or is there something yet to come? That's what we're going to explore with Dr. Brian L. Weiss, who was trained in traditional psychotherapy, received his medical degree at Yale University of Medicine, interned at New York University's Bellevue Medical Center, and became chief resident at the Department of Psychiatry, Yale University School of Medicine, founding chairman and chairman emeritus, Department of Psychiatry, Mount Sinai Medical Center. Dr. Weiss is a heavyweight. He maintains a busy private practice in Miami, travels extensively, giving lectures and workshops based on his best-selling books. He outlined his conversation to regression therapy in his best-selling book, Many Lives, Many Masters, about a difficult patient who, under hypnosis, began talking of events in her other lives. Many Lives, Many Masters, you might be interested, has sold more than 2 million copies worldwide. That's a lot. And has been translated into over 30 languages. During the past 15 years, he has practiced regression therapy with patients of diverse religions and occupations. This is going to be very interesting.
Streamlink, the audio subscription service of Coast to Coast AM, has a new name, Coast Insider. You'll still get all the same great features for the same low price. The package includes podcasting, which automatically downloads shows for you, and the iPhone app. You'll also get our amazing download library of 3 full years of shows. That's over 1,000 shows for you to collect and enjoy. If you're a fan of Coast, you won't want to be without Coast Insider. Visit coasttocoastam.com to sign up. Weird stories on the radio? Must be Coast to Coast AM with George Norrie.
You know, when I started doing this radio program, Jesse, half of the subjects I was really into, the paranormal, the unusual, ghosts, and things like that.
Yeah.
The conspiracy stories, you know, I was a little weary about these, other than the Kennedy assassination. And all of a sudden, I woke up. I simply woke up. Is that what happened with you two?
Yeah, that's when I really started to say, what is going on here? And I started to truly then investigate 9/11. And today, I don't believe the government story of 9/11. Here's the three options. Either we knew about it and allowed it to happen, or we knew about it and participated in it, or these were the dumbest buffoons that could have ever been in charge of our country, who could have all this pre-information. And I started to think they knew what was going to happen. They either are part of it or they allowed it to. There's no doubt in my mind.
Now we take you back to the night of March 15th, 2002, on Art Bell, Somewhere in Time.
it has been many, many years ago that I interviewed Dr. Brian Weiss on a program called Dreamland that Whitley now hosts. And how long ago, Doctor? Any idea?
Oh, it was at least 10 years ago.
10 years ago. Wow, a decade. Welcome back to the program.
Thank you, Art.
That's a long hiatus.
Yes.
So 10 years ago, we're going to virtually begin at the beginning. You may have heard what I said, you know, top of the hour. I think it's the most important question for mankind, individual mankind. Every man and woman on the face of the earth will want to know what's going to happen when their physical body expires, and it's not going to be very long, no matter how old or young you are. Our stay here is very short indeed, and the options are, I don't know, eternal blackness, heaven, hell, and maybe a trip back. That's certainly one of the big possibilities, and that's what you're here to talk about, right?
Exactly right. That's what I've been doing for the past 20 years, really, studying about people who have died and come back here, and accumulating evidence, accumulating data, but also, since I'm a psychiatrist, also working at the therapeutic level, watching them get rid of symptoms, feel better, remove obstacles and blocks to their inner peace, and get rid of anxiety, psychosomatic disorders, things like that. So two levels, one, the validation, but also at a healing level, it's very powerful.
Mm-hmm. In other words, if you, were thrown in the ring with the lions back in the days of Rome's ascension, then maybe you have a particular fear of lions, right?
Well, exactly right. Or a fear of animals, or a fear of violence, or a fear of being cut or torn.
Mm-hmm.
It depends on the person. I was treating a radiologist at Mount Sinai Hospital who had severe and chronic back pain, and nobody could do anything about it. He'd been to orthopedic surgeons. He's a physician, too.
I know people like that.
Sure. Mm-hmm. And no, he was on medications for it, which he really didn't like. It made him very groggy.
Right.
And when he had a regression, we did pretty safe, just like the HGH you talked about. There's no danger here. It's very safe. He went back in time and had a vivid memory of being lanced or speared in the back in a medieval battle.
Mm.
And we couldn't prove that one. It was too long ago. There wasn't anything to look up. But for him, it was very profound because of the vivid nature of the recall, but also his back pain disappeared. And this is without using any medication. It hasn't been back since. So at the cosmic level, yes, we have to find out about life and death and what happens when we leave these physical bodies, what happens to our consciousness. These are very, very important questions, as you said.
Well,
but also at the physical level, there's a great deal of healing going on.
Yes. Well, all right. You've got another 10 years of investigation under your belt since we last talked. If I were to just ask you, Doctor, to lay it on the table and give me what you consider the best evidence for reincarnation, what kind of things would you tell me?
Well, there are quite a few. But when we look at the validational things, it's important to remember that this is not done in a laboratory. This is like a social science. We're not going to get DNA tests. We're not going to get chromosome analysis. So when somebody, during a regression in my office, comes up with names, dates, details, someone comes up, for example, with a concentration camp number that they're reading from their arm,
yes,
but they're only 30 years old now.
Right.
And it turns out that that number completely connects to the person they're describing, the name, the city, the occupation, the store, the relatives.
You're telling me this has happened to you in your investigation?
This has happened to me, and there's a physician in Sweden who has 36 cases of this type of thing, Holocaust memories, World War II memories, where he's taken the people back to their towns or villages in Europe and confirmed. Another very strong one, Art, is xenoglossy, which is speaking foreign languages that you've never learned.
Of course, yes. Of
I've
course.
Had a few cases of that in my practice. It's fascinating. One that was really blew me away was, and I'm a very left-brain scientific type, as you remember, Columbia, chemistry major, Yale,
yes.
the old academic ways.
Yes.
And I was seeing a physician from mainland China. She had come over to the U.S., her first trip out of China. She didn't speak one word of English, couldn't even say hello.
Mm-hmm.
She came with a translator, and the regressions work very well with interpreters, too, because it doesn't get in the way. It actually is like a 1-2 thing. They hear 10-9-8 or whatever twice. So they can go very deep. She went very deep in this regression, and she went back and was remembering an argument with her husband in a past life in the Northern California area about 150 years ago. Again, it wasn't enough data to prove it in a laboratory, but this is the interesting part. She's having this argument, and she begins to speak in very colorful English. The translator, who isn't aware of what's happening yet, he does what translators do. He starts translating it back into Chinese. And I held up my hand and I said...
And this lady, you know for certain, didn't speak a word of English.
Didn't speak a word of English. She couldn't even say hello, because before we started the regression, we were discussing how do you say hello in English and in Chinese. She couldn't speak any English. The translator verified that. She had never been really exposed to it. She had never studied it. She was trained in Western medicine in China, so she was a very left brain academic.
You know, it's like there's only two possibilities, Dr. Weiss. You remember Dr. Mack was ambushed. You know, you remember that, right?
Yes, oh yes.
So there's only two possibilities here. Either you were ambushed, or everything you're telling us adds up to absolute reincarnation, I mean a past life, period.
Well, that's the type of thing, and I see hundreds and hundreds of these kinds of validation cases. By the way, the interpreter, when I pointed out that I understood English, he nearly fainted. He was
sure.
Not acting. He
I'm
was...
sure. I mean, but how much trouble, when you get something that serious, doctor,
mm-hmm.
how thoroughly sure are you that you're not being stung?
Well, one can never be 100% sure, but in that case, and again, it helps to have been a psychiatrist for the past 30 years.
Sure.
I really observe human behavior, and I have come across all kinds of people, as you have, and I look at them clinically. She was not acting. She couldn't speak English when it ended, and I know that, and the interpreter was not acting. He nearly fainted. This was real. And these kinds of things happen rarely, xenoglossy that's called. But the other things, the concentration camp numbers, these kinds of validation cases, they're not so rare. Usually the critics, though, the skeptics, have never done their homework. I remember debating once Carl Sagan, the astronomer.
Oh, yes.
And we were talking about what you and I are talking about now. And he was saying, oh, it can't be, and blah, blah. He was a member of the Skeptic Society.
Although toward the end of his life, he began to sort of change.
Yes, yes, he did. And he, of course, a very bright person. He had not prepared. He hadn't read any of my books or other books. He hadn't experienced this. He hadn't done this. And he came with these very intellectual arguments. But when I pointed out that he hadn't really done his homework, he hadn't prepared, he hadn't tried it, he hadn't really read about it, he was not being a scientist. Being a scientist means keeping an open mind so that you can learn new things. You can evaluate data as it comes in a dispassionate way. And then he apologized, much to his credit.
Did he? Really?
He did. And that was rare for a skeptic. Usually they have lots of intellectual arguments, but once you start telling them what the research really indicates, because they have no idea about these cases, they often either stop talking or they change their tune, if they're intelligent enough to do that.
Taking it back for you, doctor, when you, and I don't know what patient one or zero, I guess they call them patient zero, was for you, the first person that you took back, I mean, how did it happen? Were you in a normal regressive hypnosis session for some sort of, I would assume, therapy work? I mean, how did it happen? How did the first patient slip back?
So that was a very important patient, the one in Many Lives, Many Masters, because I was a complete skeptic. I didn't believe in any of this. They don't teach this at Yale Medical School.
I'm sure they don't.
And they still don't.
Uh-huh. So what were you doing with this person at the time? Therapy?
Yes. I had been seeing her for over a year. She had a lifelong fear of gagging or choking, and her symptoms were depression, phobias, and panic attacks. She wouldn't take any medicine because of this fear of gagging, so I wanted to use hypnosis, which I had learned when I was at Bellevue, to take her back into her childhood, where I felt there must be traumas that she was not remembering.
Sure.
Hypnosis is very safe. It's just a form of focusing the concentration. People are misled because of what they've seen on television or in the movies, but it's really just focusing the concentration.
Is the stage hypnotist, just as a quick question here, that we see having, you know, people barking up there and doing all kinds of weird things, can that really be done with hypnosis? Does that work? Is that real?
It's semi-real. That is, a person can go into the state, but they can end it at any time. They can open their eyes. They can stop it.
But if they're having fun, I mean...
If they're having fun, you're exactly right. That's
okay.
It. If they're having fun, they'll keep doing it.
I see.
If they want to stop it, they stop it. They are always in control. So I was working with Catherine. She agreed to let me do this hypnosis, and I explained what it was. And she went back into her childhood and did find serious traumas that I felt could explain her symptoms. Mm-hmm. In the current time, this was not a past life, this was childhood, but her symptoms remained severe. The next week I told her, while she was in a deep hypnotic state, to go back to the time where her symptoms first began. I thought she'd go back even earlier in her childhood. Uh-huh. But she went back about 4,000 years.
4,000 years?
Yes.
Now, how did you recognize the fact that you had just jumped 4,000 years?
Well, she started describing the culture she was in, which was in the Near Eastern type of culture, very primitive. She described the types of buildings, houses, the food, the utensils, these kinds of details.
Oh.
And she came up with a date, which is for 20 years or whatever, this has caused skeptics to go crazy because they don't understand what hypnosis is. And the date was a B.C. date. It was 18 or something B.C., and she described dying in a flood or tidal wave at the end of that life.
Now wait. She described a B.C. date. She didn't actually put it that way, did she?
Yes, she did.
She did. Now, see, I don't understand that. How could she say B.C. because C hadn't occurred yet?
Exactly right. And
so how does that happen?
Because she's not actually there. She's remembering this. If, for example, you under hypnosis went back to your 10th birthday party.
So she's able to use a cognitive contemporary reference.
Exactly. She's looking from a larger perspective at the same time she's experiencing it. It's much like being in the movie theater and watching a movie. But the person next to you can ask you a question, you can answer it and still watch the movie.
Okay.
This is the same rationale for her speaking English, which wasn't even invented in 1800 B.C.,
right.
And I went with her into other lifetimes that first time. But the amazing thing to me, I thought this was fantasy or imagination because I had no belief in past
that
lives.
That was your first reaction, that it was fantasy run wild?
It was my intellectual reaction. But I couldn't understand why she was remembering with such detail and with such emotion. And within a week, her lifelong fear of gagging or choking, the reason she wouldn't take any medicines, I would usually use antidepressant medicines for symptoms like hers, this choking phobia had disappeared. She remembered gagging in the water. And after that memory, the symptom, which had been with her since she was a little girl, disappeared.
What had happened to her so long ago that caused that?
Well, nothing. She was, from the earliest time she could remember, she had a fear of gagging or choking. It turned out that it was related to this ancient drowning in that past life.
Yeah, that's what I meant. She had drowned?
She drowned. Mm-hmm. And the choking disappeared. So as a psychiatrist, this was extremely important to me. And even though I was having a difficult time intellectually, understanding that this could be more than imagination or fantasy, maybe even more than metaphor or symbol, she was getting better, and so I kept doing this work.
Well, whatever works, I guess.
Exactly.
Doctor, hold on. We're at the bottom of the hour, and we'll be right back. I'm Art Bell.
You're listening to Art Bell, Somewhere in Time, on Premier Radio Networks. Tonight's an encore presentation of Coast to Coast AM from March 15th, 2002.
Do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do follow him. Ever since he touched my hand, I knew that near him I always must be, and nothing can keep him from me. He is my destiny.
You're listening to Art Bell, Somewhere in Time, on Premier Radio Networks. Tonight's an encore presentation of Coast to Coast AM from March 15th, 2002.
The guest is Dr. Brian Weiss, and the subject is reincarnation. Stay right there.
Streamlink, the audio subscription service of Coast to Coast AM, has a new name. Coast Insider. You'll still get all the same great features for the same low price. The package includes podcasting, which automatically downloads shows for you, and the iPhone app. You'll also get our amazing download library of 3 full years of shows. That's over 1,000 shows for you to collect and enjoy. If you're a fan of Coast, you won't want to be without Coast Insider. Visit coasttocoastam.com to sign up. You're listening to Art Bell, Somewhere in Time, on Premier Radio Networks. Tonight's an encore presentation of Coast to Coast AM from March 15th, 2002.
Well, all right. Dr. Weiss, I'm trying to figure out how to knock a hole in all of this, and so I'm going to ask you a question. I take it you're probably familiar with some of the interesting results from transplant surgery.
Yes.
Where heart and lungs were implanted into a woman who then began to have the cravings of an 18-year-old that had donated these organs, that sort of thing, right?
Yes.
And you're also familiar with the concept of or the possibility of genetic, some sort of genetic memory. So I wonder if you consider any of these.
Well, I did.
These anomalies, you know, as one possible answer for what you're finding.
Yes, as scientists, I have to look at other explanations. I always do this because if you don't do that, you're not acting in an intelligent way.
Here, here.
It's just that there's a saying in medicine also that when you hear hoofbeats, don't look for zebras. So reincarnation seems to fit as the most economical answer. Take genetic memory, for example. I've had so many patients who have died as children or died childless, not passing on any genetic material, and yet they go directly to that person.
Good
didn't
point.
Pass anything on. So
yeah,
it's got to be more than that.
Good point.
The transplant stuff is really interesting, and that could be that's connected in the realm of consciousness. Because it's true what you said. People do take on certain memories or characteristics or affinities or likes of the donor.
Which implies a cellular transference.
Exactly. But there you've got the direct transplant. But in these cases, you don't. You've got someone being born as an infant.
Yeah.
And there is no transmission of genetic material, only from the parents, but the memories come from way different sources. So it's not that. It's got to be something beyond that.
As a matter of interest, Doctor, how many people in the world embrace the concept of reincarnation versus the percentage that do not? Do you have any idea?
Some idea. I know that, of course, you know that in Eastern traditions, this has never gone underground. In the Jewish religion, belief in reincarnation was mainstream until the 19th century A.D., and in Christianity was for several centuries too. Right now, most of the world believes in reincarnation. In the United States, in 1994, a Gallup survey indicated 28% of Americans believed in reincarnation. I think it's much higher now.
28% then, but you say in the world as a whole, more people believe in it. In other words, we're in the minority.
Yes, absolutely. When I was in Brazil, for example, they did a Gallup poll there too, a survey, and it was exactly the opposite. Two-thirds of Brazilians believe in reincarnation. I think we find that in Latin America, more than half, more than 50% believe in reincarnation. In Asia, of course, huge percentages. So when you start adding it up,
we're
most of the world does believe in it.
Distinct minority here.
Yes.
What about the Dalai Lama? Now, they go on this great search whenever the Dalai Lama dies to find the next Dalai Lama.
Right.
How do they know they've got the right one?
Well, their test is bringing artifacts and instruments and everyday things, cups, whatever, from the old Dalai Lama. They carry that with them.
Yes.
And if the child, who's usually about two or three, is able to identify these objects, the correct ones, they may have four or five cups, and he picks the correct one. He knows names, like of elderly lamas who were close to the previous Dalai Lama.
Huh.
So that's the kind of test they give him, a kind of recognition,
yeah.
Names. And
so they get very serious about it.
They're very serious about this. I always thought it would be a little boring, though, to do a regression with the Dalai Lama, because what would you get?
Dalai Lama after Dalai Lama after
exactly.
Dalai Lama, unless they've made a mistake somewhere along the line.
Right.
Well, that's fascinating. Well, if reincarnation is real, and the evidence that you talk about is pretty strong,
mm-hmm.
then the next thing that I'd like to know, I guess, is how it works. And I can't think of anybody better to ask than somebody who's done this research about the nature of reincarnation itself. What do we know? Do we come back right away?
Well, I'll tell you what, I'm just talking from my own research, and this is with 3,000 patients since Catherine, and more than that, individually, many more in groups, but just 3,000 in my office. And we seem to go on. This is the whole idea of consciousness being non-local, being greater than the physical brain or the physical
right.
body.
And here we go again. Everybody's talking about non-locality.
That's the thing. But it seems to be, in my research, that whatever you want to name this, some people call it the soul, the spirit, consciousness, awareness, doesn't matter what we call it. This goes on and learns, seems to have lessons and a life review, all the things that the near-death experiencers, researchers like Kubler-Ross and Melvin Morse and Raymond Moody and the others,
yes.
they also find this too. And it's the same thing with the after-death experience, except that you don't come back into the present body. And that's the whole concept of consciousness, and you've been into this a lot, I know.
Yes.
With remote viewing and with the near-death experience.
I sure have.
That consciousness goes on, learning never stops, and since we have more than one chance to get it right, we seem to come back here into an infant's body. I want to answer one more question. I know you're going to ask it, but certainly there are many people out there. It's the other question, the intellectual question that stops people sometimes from studying this further, because they can't, they always ask me, and I asked myself this question when it first started happening to me, how do the numbers fit? Perhaps there are more physical bodies now than ever before. Where are the souls coming from if reincarnation is real?
Yes, excellent question. Yes, I would have asked it.
Yeah, I ask this to my patients when they're in the deep state. I've been asking them this for years. The two most common answers to this, and there really are always answers to all of these questions, and if people just keep an open mind, I don't mean you have a very open mind, but the
Well,
skeptics,
there are now 6 billion of us and growing,
right.
So what answers do you get?
The most common answer, Art, is that it's so egocentric and so human-like to think of ourselves as the only people in the only place, that there's so many dimensions in other places where souls or consciousness exist. This
so,
is just
oh,
one
oh, of course that's
little...
the answer. So in other words, the non-locality is the answer.
Yes, it fits there too. And in the Kabbalah and in certain mystical traditions, the concept that the soul can have simultaneous experiences can split, actually be in more than one body at the same time.
Another possible answer.
Yes, possible. But the one that comes up the most frequently is the first answer. This is not the only place.
In that case, then there should be some regressions literally to something that does not make any sense to you at all, because you know how you don't have a reference for it. I mean, you might be able to talk to somebody, for example, who was there 2000 BC and be able to converse, but gee whiz, if you go back to somebody who was on Zeta Reticuli or something like that, then you're going to be into a frame of reference you would not understand. So have you run into those?
Rarely. I think one reason is because I'm working so often with patients who have symptoms. in my work. And these symptoms tend to come from lifetimes here on the Earth.
Uh-huh.
And mostly that's what comes up. But occasionally something will come up that seems very strange or very unusual. And
well, here's another one for you that fits in with what you said. Last night I had Dr. Michio Kaku on. And he talks about non-locality a great deal as well, and he talks about other dimensions. He talks about, for example, if you were able to travel back in time and you killed your grandmother, that there would be a split. There would be two universes, and this would avoid the age-old problem of, you know, killing your grandmother, that problem. There would be one in which you had killed your grandmother or somebody else, and another reality in which you had not.
Yes.
So literally, there would be a new bubble, a new universe created. That could also account for a lot.
Exactly.
Of this.
It gets very, very interesting that way. I think this world, this physical dimension, here we have time, here we have past lives. But
yes,
when you get outside of here, maybe everything is even simultaneous.
And maybe
the longitudinal here. And I think the same thing with the future, because sometimes, again, rarely, but sometimes, a patient will flip into a future life, something that seems not to have happened yet. And that may not be the actual future. It could be a distortion. It could be probable futures and possible futures.
Boy,
and
that
probable
fits. That really fits right in, doesn't it?
It does. And it's so fascinating as a scientist to sit back and accumulate this data. Of course, it's very gratifying as people get better and get rid of fears and feel better, but also these cosmic issues, which, as you said in the beginning, involve all of us. This is why we're here, we deal with these questions of life and death and what comes next and why are we here, what's our purpose in life.
Right.
These are the really important questions, and it does seem to all fit. And the physicists are really the mystics of our time.
They are, aren't they? Yes.
They really are.
All right, well, so then, again, I ask, does it appear to you that the nature of this says we'll say we come back again and again? Is there ever a time when we finally do not come back? Have you made any conclusions in that area? You know, many believe that we are trying to achieve perfection, and when we get there, why, then we pop off to a nicer place.
I think so. I think what happens is that we graduate, that this is like a big school here, and we eventually graduate. We've learned our lessons, and we graduate. We don't have to come back here anymore. We may be helping out from the other side, but then I find that some people volunteer to come back here. They don't have to come back, but they come back voluntarily to help other humans progress. And so really we don't all completely graduate until everybody has graduated. But this is kind of like a school. Maybe it's a junior high school or a high school. This is not the only place. And as we graduate this school, we may go on to other schools, which perhaps have different characteristics, such as mind-to-mind contact, no illness, maybe bodies are lighter, higher vibrational rate, these kinds of things that people describe to me as I sit there listening in my office to all of this.
Now, you know what a Bible scholar would say about all of this, of course, you know, that it's rubbish, that we die and we're dead until we're told to arise at the appropriate time or something like that.
Right.
Now, what do you say to those folks? I mean, there is the Bible.
There is the Bible, but of course if you were born in India or Japan or China and you had other holy books which espouse reincarnation, you would believe something completely different. But there is the Bible, and what I've done, I've of course debated many, many religious people, and there are two approaches I take to it. One, and I'm not a religious scholar, but I have read carefully the New Testament, the Old Testament, and I point people to Jesus talking about, do you recognize that John the Baptist is Elijah returned? Elijah lived 900 years before John the Baptist. How did he return in John the Baptist?
Yes.
And many other examples in the New Testament of Jesus talking about reincarnation. Now, I'm not talking about what the church did 600 years later.
Oh, by the way, would you point that out to everybody with regard to the belief in reincarnation, what the church did in fact do?
Yes, the belief in reincarnation was there for several centuries after Jesus, and Jesus believed in reincarnation. That's very clear from reading the New Testament. He talks about it in seven or eight different places. But beginning with Constantine in the 4th century and ending at the Council of Nicaea in the 6th century, references to reincarnation were deleted for political reasons. The Romans thought, as they began to embrace Christianity as the state religion, that without the whip of Judgment Day, people wouldn't listen. They wouldn't obey. The Romans were into control. That's fine. That's politics. But they took it out, and this was 600 years after Jesus. But as I said, the original writers, the original followers and apostles and Jesus himself, they seem to all have believed in reincarnation. And that was also an Essene belief at the 2,000 years ago.
How much do we know about that sit-down, the one that resulted in reincarnation being yanked, eliminated? I wonder how much text was burned or shredded or whatever they did at the time.
Yeah, probably a lot. The deletions were made. The largest library now of reincarnational literature is in the Vatican. We just don't have access to it. But that's where it is. Another approach I've taken is in Mirrors of Time, the newest book.
Yes.
That I've written. And it's a smaller book. It has a CD of an actual regression in it. That is, people listening to the CD can have their own regressions.
Oh,
this
no,
is my
no,
way of increasing the end, you know, of getting people, play the CD, have your own regressions, and let me know about it. Or
Wait, son. Mm-hmm. You say there's a regression. Do you mean that you, on the CD, actually take somebody into a state so that they have their own regression? Is that what you're telling
exactly.
me?
Exactly. This is what I do with all my patients.
Oh.
I have them practicing in between sessions. So I've kind this is the other thing I say to religious people and to other people who may have intellectual beliefs that block them from experiencing. I say, now, why don't you experience it for yourself? Then you'll really know.
Is it safe?
It's very safe, Art. I've used this for CDs. The book is new, but the CDs that I've been using have been out for several years. Thousands and thousands of people have used these CDs. They exist in Spanish and Portuguese also. And I haven't had one adverse experience over the last 7 or 8 years.
What percentage of success have you had?
A lot. A lot. It runs about 75%. Now, it may not be the first time, but it's a CD. You can use it again
and
again.
Now, how do people... Are they instructed at some point to remember everything that you have taken them through?
Yes, they are instructed, but 99% of people will remember everything. They will remember the past lives. There's only about 1% who goes so deep that they won't remember. So I did put an instruction, you will remember everything that you just experienced. It's very safe. The subconscious mind is very protective. If at any time a person is uncomfortable, they only have to open their eyes or they can float into a beautiful garden that I describe and rest. So it's very good just for relaxing.
But wouldn't a prior life or prior lives inevitably include prior deaths?
The person in the CD, I give them the choice. If they want to experience it, they can. If they don't, they don't have to. If they want to just float above and detach and watch it without emotion from a distance, like watching a movie,
really?
They can do that.
Really?
Mm-hmm. And this is one of my answers. Try it. Experience it for yourself, and then you'll know, because experience is stronger than belief.
It's kind of scary, though.
It's very sick.
The idea of trying it is kind of scary.
Well, that's what I tell them. You know, if you really are so, and some of them really get emotional about this stuff, if you really want to know more, then try it. It's very safe. There aren't enough therapists. I train therapists at 100 or 200 every year to do regression therapy. But it's still, the demand is so high. I stopped my waiting list at 5,000 people because it was ridiculous. I'd be doing this in my next lifetime.
Oh, yeah. Well, you may be anyway.
I think so.
You may not be finished. That's incredible. And how many CDs have you put out over the years?
Well, I have three of them, but one of them...
No. Numerically. How many?
Oh, numerically?
No. Mm-hmm.
Oh, God. We've sold many thousands.
Thousands.
In this book, you have Mirrors of Time. For several months was the number one book in Brazil. which has a population of 165 million people.
But, Doctor, if people stop being afraid of death, isn't there liable to be anarchy? I know it's not exactly like the guys that struck all this stuff out, but...
That's what they did, yes, in the Council of Nicaea.
Yes.
You lose control. I don't think so, Art.
Well, it is a fair argument, though.
Yes, yes.
Especially for the West right now. I mean, where the culture has always believed in this would be one thing... they've somehow adjusted, but to suddenly be aware that, you have no reason to fear death, that seems to me potentially very dangerous for the West. Doctor, hold on. We're at the top of the hour. Dr. Brian Weiss is my guest. Would you be afraid of death? Maybe not, if you knew you were coming back.
You're listening to Art Bell Somewhere in Time. Tonight featuring a replay of Coast to Coast AM from March 15, 2002. Listening to Art Bell Somewhere in Time. Tonight featuring a replay of Coast to Coast AM from March 15, 2002.
Let's all go living in the past. Now, if what Dr. Weiss is saying is true, and you can actually do this with a CD that will instruct you and take you back, isn't that kind of time travel? In more ways than one, that is time travel, and you're doing it all in your own head. Think about that. We'll be right back.
Looking for the truth? You'll find it on Coast to Coast AM with George Norrie.
I really believe that my role is to inform people, to try to bring them the truth. Yes, this is a program where we have some fun, and sometimes it's very, very unusual and strange. But I want them to understand what's happening in the world around them, whether it's climate change, economy, war, and the reasons for all these things. So that's what I think my mission is.
Streamlink, the audio subscription service of Coast to Coast AM, has a new name, Coast Insider. You'll still get all the same great features for the same low price, just 15 cents a day when you sign up for 1 year. The package includes podcasting, which offers the convenience of having shows downloaded automatically to your computer or MP3 player and the iPhone app with live and on-demand programs. You'll also get our amazing download library of 3 full years of shows. Just think, As a new subscriber, over 1,000 shows will be available for you to collect, enjoy, and listen to at your leisure. Plus, you'll get streamed and on-demand broadcasts of Art Bell's Somewhere in Time shows and two weekly classics. And as a member, you'll have access to our monthly live chat sessions with George Norrie and special guests. If you're a fan of Coast, you won't want to be without Coast Insider. Visit coasttocoastam.com to sign up today. Weird stories on the radio? Must be Coast to Coast AM with George Norrie.
You know, when I started doing this radio program, Jesse, half of the subjects I was really into, the paranormal, the unusual, ghosts, and things like that.
Yeah.
The conspiracy stories, you know, I was a little weary about these, other than the Kennedy assassination. And all of a sudden, I woke up. I simply woke up. Is that what happened with you too?
Yeah, that's when I really started to say, what is going on here? And I started to truly then investigate 9/11. And today, I don't believe the government story of 9/11. Here's the three options. Either we knew about it and allowed it to happen, or we knew about it and participated in it, or these were the dumbest buffoons that could have ever been in charge of our country, who could have all this pre-information. And I started to think they knew it was going to happen. They either are part of it or they allowed it to. There's no doubt in my mind.
Now we take you back to the night of March 15th, 2002, on Art Bell, Somewhere in Time.
Well, all right, this is kind of an interesting question, so let's follow up on it a little bit, and it is, here in the West, where we don't particularly by majority embrace reincarnation, if proof enough was laid on the table that masses began to convert to the concept, it just seems as though there would be possible anarchy here, because we have not been brought up in a culture where we understand reincarnation to be a fact and have learned to act sociably accordingly in a reasonable way. So what do you think about that?
Well, I can look at the patients that I've had over these years, and more than 3,000, and many more in groups or using the CD who have had their own experiences. I don't find that they're more violent. I don't find that there's a danger there. They seem to be happier. That is, they know that they're immortal, is another way of putting it. They don't die when their bodies die. There's something to look forward to in that sense. They know that their loved ones, too, go on, so that they're going to be reunited either on the other side, after death, or back here again.
Mm-hmm.
So people seem to have the reaction of losing fears, of losing symptoms, of feeling better, and of not grieving so much, because they know that death is not what they thought it was. Actually, we never die because we're never really born. We exist before we come into the bodies, too. So I think our culture is mature enough to handle this information in a better way than perhaps the ancient people. For example, the Romans...
Doctor, I would think that your patients would be predisposed perhaps to accept this more easily, but do you think that would be true of the general population? In other words, if a whole belief system suddenly flipped, and it was sufficient proof, and everybody said, well, all right, it is true. Reincarnation is absolutely true. And that went all the way across every sector of society. There is going to be one sector that's going to react in sort of a anarchistic way, isn't there?
Yes. And I don't know. That's a fascinating question. It's never really come up before, because no one's ever thought that this could happen as a revolution, you know, that quickly.
Just a thought. Here's another one. This is really interesting. You know, I've interviewed another researcher in this field named Dr. Goldberg, and he has done quite a number of progressions into the future with patients. And there seems to be this worrisome barrier in not too many years out, Dr. Weiss, where people can't seem to go. And I wonder if you've run into any of that.
Well, it's a complicated issue, Art. One thing is, to me, the future is not really necessarily as fixed as we think. There's a system of probabilities and possibilities and consciousness. So I've had some patients who go into the future, and I don't do this a lot as a therapist because you have to be a pretty mature patient. You may get some distortion because it's coming through the human mind.
True.
For example, a woman may see the end of the world in 20 years. This is something that I'm making up now. This is not a psychic prediction or anything like that.
Sure.
It's not an actual case.
Sure.
And she may decide not to have any children in this life because why do you bring a child into a world that's going to be destroyed in 20 years?
Yes.
And yet, that may not be the actual future. That can be a distortion. It can be something psychological. It may be a remote possible future, but not the most probable future. And you really need a mature patient to do that. So,
nevertheless, my question stands: have you?
Yes,
you have.
I have people go way into the future.
Oh, you have.
Yeah, people have gone more.
And others that have run into roadblocks.
Some. I don't know Dr. Goldberg's work that closely where his block actually is.
About 2004.
2004?
Yeah.
Well, I've had many people go, you know, 1,000 years into it.
Okay. Well, that's
comforting. Several thousand years, yeah. Well, I don't know Dr. Goldberg that well. I've met him a few times. He's a dentist.
Yes.
Yes, and his background is in that. But when you really have to understand the mind. I mean, and that takes many years of study. So you have to be able to recognize distortions and where the block is coming from. And conceivably, could the block be coming from him? Because
that's a good question. Next time I speak with him, I will ask him exactly that.
That's a possibility, too. He may be blocking it in his patients.
Have you ever asked him that?
No.
No, I will. I will, no problem. Okay, then. If those possible distortions apply to the future, why shouldn't we believe they equally apply to the past?
Well, it seems in this world, again, this three-dimensional world, this physical world, this is the difficult place, by the way, where we have relationships, physical bodies, motion, pain. It seems that the past is more fixed, that as we come through it, it's almost like it solidifies in a sense, and the future is not. That depends on our choices. It's kind of an interplay of free will and destiny all coming together. But the past, since it's already happened in this three-dimensional world, seems much more fixed than the future. Another researcher who's not alive now in terms of physical body, Helen Wambach, did this research of taking groups of people into the future, doing these progressions.
Yes.
And she had no trouble taking people 500 years, 1,000 years into the future.
And getting descriptions of the world as it would be then?
Yes. What she did was interesting. She would then she would take people to discrete years or time periods in the future, 500 years, 1,000 years, 10,000 years. And then she would give them questionnaires and see if there was some sort of correlation or consistency.
And
she found these things. So,
can you recall in what kind of areas? I mean, that's really interesting.
I remember the ones that were short term, like the next 100 years. There was still a lot of turmoil, but there was it seemed to me, as I'm recalling, much more peacefulness. That's what I remember. Somewhere like 500 years out, but a great technological progress as well, and somehow. Although this seems like a difficult situation right now, somehow we had caught up spiritually or morally or ethically with our technology. That is, we weren't just abusing it for destructive purposes.
Well, I hope that's our future.
I hope so too.
I worry a lot reading the headlines every day that it will not be.
Exactly.
But that's a hopeful thought. Now, what we're really talking about here, well, it really is time travel, isn't it?
It is. I heard you say that before, and I was chuckling because it's very true. You can listen to the CD, for example, or go to a therapist. You could time travel in your head, on your couch, and you're sitting there, and you can really go back or forward. I think it's regression archaeology.
Okay, can I ask the following?
Sure.
If I were to do this and I were to go back to a past life, doctor, Would I have the option of immersing myself in that life, feeling it, seeing it, being it, close to what I now see as reality in front of me with my broadcast equipment and all the rest of it? Could I see it that clearly, literally living it, or would I see it dispassionately in a detached way?
Well, people have both experiences, and it's hard to predict before the person has the experience what kind of experience they'll have. Some people experience it visually and with great detail and emotion.
That's living it.
And others kind of in a detached way, and some not physically at all. They just kind of know things or feel things. So everybody's a little bit different. One of the most vivid I can remember is a professor of engineering, and I took him out. I was teaching at a group conference. We were doing some group regressions, and I picked him out as an individual volunteer. Now, he didn't believe in this. He came because his wife believed in it, and he was keeping her company.
Sure.
And he went back to Roman times, and he was describing in infinite detail the armor and almost an arrogant attitude of how the arrows or spears or whatever the weapons were of the barbarians, I think it was a Germanic tribe, would not be able to pierce this kind of armor. So they really, the Romans were so technologically ahead. Then he described the battle strategy and what they would do. And it was,
really?
That was so vivid.
Really? That must be incredible to listen to.
It's amazing. And sometimes, you know, I do this, and I've been doing this for so many years, I forget how amazing it is.
You know, I want to ask you something. This is radio. Do any of your patients ever give you permission, or have you sought permission in particularly interesting cases? Obviously, you've recorded these sessions. Now, it sure would be interesting to hear on the radio a really interesting session.
Yes. I think it would be even better someone who's not a patient. For example, I often regress news people or producers or whatever for television and in other ways because they need some sort of visual thing. They don't like to just talk, and so they need these props. So I was in New York to do a show called Good Morning America.
Oh, I know it well. Yes,
I wanted someone who would be a producer or a volunteer. They wanted a regression. But the medical correspondent, Nancy Snyderman, she wanted it very desperately. She wanted to be the subject.
Okay.
And we did this, and they had three cameras and, of course, excellent sound equipment. And we recorded a very intense regression. She went back to childhood and remembered vividly walking with her father when she was a young girl and all of the sensations, crunching snow. This was happening in St. Louis.
Sure.
And then she remembered her, and this is interesting, in utero experience and birth experience.
Oh, now that is interesting and slightly terrifying.
A little, for her, though, you know, it's much safer, as we talked about. And she remembered an incident from one day old that she had never been told about that she confirmed with her mother.
Oh, my.
It was amazing. And then she had a past life where her brother from this life was killed as a... Her younger brother in this life was her older brother in the past life. And he was shot and killed accidentally in that life. And she was just wailing at the time. She was broken down.
You're telling
sobbing.
Me all of this occurred on Good Morning America?
Well, no. It was never shown.
What?
Yes.
What happened?
Well, I came back to do the show the next week. And it's the night before the show, and I get a call from the producer that the higher-ups at the network decided to not air it because it was too dramatic. It was too good, and they felt it would take away from her credibility.
Wow. Well, you know, I understand that exactly. I certainly understand that. Wow.
Yes.
Wow.
But I got the tape. And I use it as a teaching tape now. I got the tape with not... You know, as long as I don't sell it or do
commercially
it,
profit from it.
Yes, right. But to use it for teaching purposes, I can do that. And that's so I do have these cases on.
I'm kind of surprised they released that to you.
I think there was some guilt because they never release it. But Gil
so
said,
did they give the tape back to you with that caveat that you could go ahead and use it in teaching, but no selling, no public network display, that kind
right.
of thing? That's amazing.
It's an amazing thing, and it was so dramatic, and explains a lot about her relationship with her brother and her mother's relationship with her brother, and she confirmed the day one memory. And it was something that she had never heard about. She was one day old. Her mother is nursing her in, and even though her father was a doctor, she's in a room with three other mothers in it who had just given birth.
Right.
And a man came into the room, one of the husbands of a different woman, and he wanted to have sex with his wife. This was one day after giving birth, and Nancy's mother was horrified. And she turned Nancy away, and she would have gotten out of the bed and left if she had been strong enough, but she wasn't. And nothing happened. The woman threw her husband out, so at least that.
Well,
but Nancy
yeah,
remembered this with emotion, that whole incident. She had never been told about this, and her mother confirmed it.
Oh, that's astounding.
It happened exactly as she remembered.
When the higher-ups said, no, destruction of credibility here, this is too much, how did she take it?
She wanted to air it because she felt it was so real, and she believes in this. And it was so intense and so emotional, she did not agree that it would take away from her credibility.
But well, I'm not sure that she's correct.
She may not be. She may not be.
That's amazing. That is just amazing. And has that very fact prevented you, do you believe, from taking this to the national networks at that level since?
Well, I've regressed many people at a national level. Sometimes for these daytime talk shows, again, they need these visual things, these props. So, and many people I cannot talk about, but many celebrities, many people who are hosts, because it's the same thing as the CD being in Mirrors of Time. I want them to have the experience. Then they can talk about it. I was on a show, actually a television show, that I walked off. It was because it was a national show, and I had regressed the hostess of the show.
Yes.
And she brought, and we had an agreement not to bring a skeptic on. She had an intense, vivid past life experience.
Right.
It was dramatic, and it was helpful to her. It explained a lot in her life, got rid of some symptoms she was having, and yet they still brought a skeptic out.
Who did they bring on?
Some law professor from Pepperdine University. I don't remember his name.
Okay.
And this was happening in Los Angeles, and the first thing he said was,
I tell you, hold it, right. That's a great hang-em up point, Doctor. We're at the bottom of the hour. We'll find out what the skeptics said in a moment. I'm Art Bell from the High Desert. This is Coast to Coast AM.
You're listening to Art Bell, Somewhere in Time, on Premier Radio Networks. Tonight's an encore presentation of Coast to Coast AM from March 15th, 2002.
For so long.
Radio Networks presents Art Bell Somewhere in Time. Tonight's program originally aired March 15, 2002.
My guest is Dr. Brian Weiss, a heavyweight, very heavyweight, big heavyweight in his field. We're talking about reincarnation.
Now we take you back to the night of March 15th, 2002, on Art Bell, Somewhere in Time.
Some of Dr. Weiss's books that you might be interested in, if you want to know more, and I imagine you do, would be Through Time into Healing. We've got links up on the website. Many Lives, Many Masters. And, of course, Mirrors of Time, Using Regression for Physical, Emotional, and Spiritual Healing. Those are some of the books you might want to touch base with. And, of course, if you have the cojones for it, the CD, which will actually allow you at home to go through a regression. Well, at any rate, back to where we were, and they brought this skeptic on the show who said what?
Who said, and this was happening in Los Angeles, if Dr. Weiss were practicing medicine in California, he would institute proceedings to have my license removed, revoked.
Oh, did he now?
Yes. That was his opening comment.
I see. And that was enough for you.
It was enough for me. I stood up and I took the microphone off because we had an arrangement, no skeptics. Mm-hmm. And this was a real card-carrying PsyCops member.
Yeah.
Who, I found out, of course, hadn't read my books, hadn't prepared, didn't know what he was talking about because he had never studied or researched the subject. They just go in and blanket that. So the producer came running out.
Yes.
The show stopped. There was a live studio audience, a lot of people. A lot of money goes into this. But we had a very clear agreement, no skeptics.
Mm.
And the producer comes running out and says, "What are you doing?" And I said, "I'm leaving." He said, "You can't leave." I said, "Why not? I don't work for you. You broke this agreement that we had." And we were very clear about that. He said, "Well, I'll take the skeptic off and we'll just retape from there." I said, "No, I'm
no,
leaving anyway.
Good.
I can't trust you now."
Good for you. Good for you. I have on my wall a snuffed candle award. I was given that award by the PsyCop people 1 year. And I wanted it so badly. It's in a beautiful wood frame. They sent it to me. And it's up on the wall, and I put it up there proudly. I consider that a badge, you know, of something or another. I'm proud that I got it.
You should be proud, yes. I remember debating on Larry King television show years ago, The Amazing Randy.
Oh, yes.
Yeah, we had, again, some very vivid regressions, not of Larry, but of other people, and they showed that, and then they brought Randy out from the wings, different dressing rooms, you know how they do it, a kind of covert operation.
The not-so-amazing Randy.
Not-so-amazing. And so he hadn't read anything either, or hadn't prepared, and I asked Larry King, why did you bring someone out who has no credentials? He just makes smoke for rock bands. That's all I knew about Randy at the time.
Mm-hmm.
And he does like that kind of effect. And he's a magician. I said, "This is a serious subject we're talking about. Why do you trivialize it by bringing this kind of person out?"
Mm, good.
And Randy turned to me and said, "You're attacking my credentials." And I said, "I wish I could, but I can't find them." And then he just blustered and was quiet for the remainder of the show. I have this on tape. Randy quiet.
Randy quiet.
Yes, that's amazing, like a miraculous event.
That is miraculous. I have been taunting Randy for years to come on this program. He won't do it.
No, he's going to have to give you $1 million or whatever.
Randy, I wanted to introduce him to some remote viewer friends, but I think he must keep his money. Listen. From Medford, Oregon, BJ asks a very important question, again, to the nature of reincarnation, and it's a very common question. Do we most frequently come back as the same sex? Do males come back as males, or sometimes females, or what?
Yes, this is a very good question, too. I find, and again, I'm just talking about my own research, not a Bruce Goldberg's or the other researchers in the field. They do good work too, but this is just my own. I do find that people change sex, they change race, they change religions, because we have to learn from all sides. The surest way to come back in a certain group of people is to hate those people, to be prejudiced against
them.
Because that's how you get pulled back.
There's cosmic justice for you.
There always is. And I do think, though, that we have, it's like in college where you take a major, but you have to take electives also. So you may choose to come back as male or female more often in one sex, but you still have to take some elective courses.
All right. Now let me try out a really sensitive one on you. It leads to this question inevitably. We have, it is said, it's argued, but probably about 10% of the population is homosexual. It's a natural question for you if perhaps we're not dealing with a male or a female that was the opposite sex in an immediate prior life or even some one further back, and simply, I mean, that's one of, there are certain animal things deep within us. One of them is our sexuality. And it seems to me that's one of the things that would very easily, very likely, carry forward. Yes or no?
Yes. Absolutely yes. Sometimes a recent lifetime has been an extremely powerful or pleasant one in the opposite sex. And some of those characteristics are retained. Just the same way a musical ability may be carried over in a young Mozart, right, may be writing symphonies at age 5.
Indeed.
Because he's carried over this talent. The same thing with sexuality. I don't know that it's true in all cases, because sometimes, you know, it is seems to be a strong physiological or genetic imprint also, but at least in some cases it has been a carryover of a very positive opposite sex previous lifetime.
Well, then, if a homosexual person were regressed and realized the reason for their homosexual present lifestyle in that regression, would as you are able to cure other ailments, would that person perhaps become heterosexual?
I haven't found that in the research, probably because it's not like the usual symptom of a phobia or a panic attack or something that clears up that way. It seems stronger than that. And a lot of people, of course, do not want to change their sexual preference. They may be coerced, or there may be kind of pressure from outside, from culture, from families.
Sure there is.
Yes, and that, but inside, subconsciously, the person usually does not want to change.
Okay.
That's their preference.
Right. But if
they understand it, and that's fine, but they still don't want to change.
But if you could eliminate a panic attack, you'd do that in a second. That's nothing like your sexual life. Yeah?
Yes.
You're right about that. I have panic attacks. I've had panic attacks for as long as I can remember. I've been in broadcasting for as long as I can remember. And stupid as it sounds, every night, just before going on the air, I have my little minor panic attack. It goes away. Once I'm into the program, just a couple minutes, it's gone. But it's always been there. It's always driven me nuts, and I can't get rid of it for all the tea in China.
Mirrors of time.
Mirrors of time, huh?
CD. It's because it may not be from a past life, or maybe something else, but it's brief, it goes away quickly.
Yes.
So it's not
But it's nevertheless very distasteful.
Yes.
I mean, a little sweat breaks out and, the breathing is changing and it's a panic attack, doctor.
Yeah. I don't know exactly what it is because we haven't done a regression, but I've had a different one. I'm thinking of a woman from South America that I saw who had severe claustrophobia. So much so that she'd panic whenever she was in a small enclosed space.
Sure.
And it turned out that she had a very vivid past life memory. It's too old to validate, but it was a strong memory for her of being buried alive, entombed alive in ancient Egypt. Their culture believed that you could take it with you, that when a noble person died, they often buried their slaves, their servants, took their gold, their money, their things, and bury them with them, because they believe that when you woke up on the other side, you'd have access to all of these things on the other side.
Wow.
It's not the case. So she died in that manner. She was a servant, and she suffocated in that burial chamber. And that was apparently one of the causes of her claustrophobia and panic attacks in this life, because they disappeared after that memory. She didn't need Xanax, didn't need medication for her, in her case. And she realized also, maybe another thing in addition to experiencing it, was that this was from the past. It was over. It was not something that was going to happen now. And maybe that intellectually also had a healing effect for her. So sometimes we do find the origins for these things, fears, panic attacks, phobias, in the past. Sometimes it's in childhood, sometimes it's in infancy, sometimes it's in a past lifetime. But we just go where the action is. That is, where is the trauma, or where are the incidents that are responsible for causing this symptom?
So somebody using your CD could come out of an experience saying, oh my God, no wonder I'm scared of high places. I fell off a cliff.
That happens.
Something like that?
A lot. That happens a lot. And it gets even stranger. For example, there was a man I know who came to a workshop I was doing. This was not even an individual patient in my office, but it was in a group. So it's like doing the CD. I do the same thing. The CD comes just from the same regression I would do in a group of small group of people.
Mm-hmm.
And he had this vivid experience. Now, in this, where he, in a past life, there was an injury to his arm. In this life, his arm, his right arm, he could not extend it all the way. There was damage at the elbow, and it showed up on MRI as damage to his elbow, to the joint. And after the regression, the next day, he came to me, and he said, my arm, I can extend it. I said, that's great, that's wonderful. And he went and had another MRI done, and the physical changes had disappeared. They had reversed.
What?
That's where it gets even stranger. We have many cases where physical symptoms reverse after having this kind of regression. Now, I don't know. That's got to be studied more. But these are many cases now where physical symptoms change. They don't just disappear. They disappear radiographically, too.
Well, it's easy to believe that our mind is nearly totally in charge of our body.
Exactly.
Right?
And so, this is another way of mobilizing the mind-body connection.
Oh, my. Did you collect the two MRIs from him?
I have several cases, yeah. I have his x-rays. I have another woman who dissolved two breast masses. This is an interesting case. She came to me for something else. She was having anxiety attacks, and she needed to have a biopsy. She had two breast masses in her right breast.
Yes.
And she came on a Thursday, and the following Monday she was scheduled for the biopsy. This is a strange story. And I gave her one of these CDs. This was before Mirrors of Time came out, and I never sold these CDs except through my office, really. They're for patients.
Mm-hmm.
So she came down, she took the CD, and she's playing it now about three times a day, because she's intensely motivated to relax and to have this procedure. And on the CD was a healing exercise using light and some other imagery. And she went in for the biopsy on the following Monday, and another mammogram was done. Now, she had three previous mammograms and an ultrasound, all documenting the existence and location of these two breast masses.
Well, you just knocked down a hole I was going to try to knock in this. I was going to say maybe it was wrong, but
they were there, non-cystic, solid, no, exact same place.
Oh, my.
She has the localizing x-ray on the Monday for the biopsy. They're gone. They're not there anymore. So the radiologist comes out to the surgeon and says, they're not here. I can't find them. And the surgeon, now the patient's premedicated on the table there, but still awake. The surgeon said, let's go in anyway. We'll use the old x-rays.
What?
The patient's listening to this. And she says, wait a minute.
Yeah,
they're not there. I'm done.
Let's go in anyway?
Anyway, yes, using the old x-rays. And the radiologist said, they're not there. They're not there. And they weren't. So I have those x-rays, too.
Good thing she wasn't under.
Yes.
Oh, my gosh. Oh, that's incredible.
Strange things happen in the operating room.
Oh,
there's all this research now, of course, too, that people, while having surgery, can hear conversations.
I know.
This is. I'm sure this is accurate, too, because I've had several instances of that.
Well, I've told this story too many times, but this one impressed me so profoundly, Doctor. I'm never going to get over it. I interviewed such a nice lady who had been on 48 Hours. I'm sure you know of the case, or you should if you don't. She had an aneurysm in her brain, and she was going to die. I mean, it was just, you know, it was a ticking time bomb, big aneurysm. And they couldn't figure anything out, so she went down to Arizona, and they removed all the blood from her body. Doctor, they cooled her body off, took all the blood out, heart stopped, EEG zero, brainwave zero, dead. They had her on the table for the better part of an hour, and in every clinical sense, she was completely dead. However, she was able to recount every single thing that occurred in that operating table, all the tools that were used that were not apparent when she was wheeled in, the conversation that went on, the entire linear hour she was able to account for. I mean, they, of course, put the blood back in her body, put the paddles on her chest, started her heart, and back she came. But not only did she remember all of that, she remembers viewing it from a detached location. She also remembers having a very serious NDE experience concurrently with all of that, as though time for her had totally stopped. But, I mean, that lady was dead for an hour, Doctor, really dead. And where was she?
I have to tell you a case, too. It's so similar. When I was chairman of psychiatry at Mount Sinai Medical Center, a cardiologist, a very prominent cardiologist, came in to see me. He had his shocking experience with one of his patients, an elderly woman who had been diabetic for many years and blind for the past several years as a complication of the diabetes. And she was in the hospital for tests, and she had a cardiac arrest. Her heart stopped. The emergency team is in there. The cardiologist in the hospital at that time is also working on her, part of the team. He had a very unusual pen, very unique. It was a gift to him, and at some point during the resuscitation, it fell out of his pocket and rolled across the room. She, meanwhile, had come out of her body and was watching the whole thing from a vantage point near a window and slightly above the floor on the other side of the room, near where the pen had rolled to.
Mm-hmm.
She was eventually revived, and a few days later, he was making medical rounds. He came to her, and she thanked him for saving her life. She told him she had seen the whole resuscitation. He said, "You couldn't. You were comatose. You were unconscious. You had a cardiac arrest."
Mm-hmm.
And then she described accurately details that you would have to be there
mm-hmm.
and see it to know.
Mm-hmm.
And she described his pen, which was unique, was, as I said, a gift to him.
Mm-hmm.
And she had never held it. And that was shocking to this cardiologist, because not only was she indeed comatose, but she's also blind. And she's describing the whole thing. So how is she seeing this? And it's the same thing as the story that was on 48 Hours. It's that part of our consciousness that is not limited to the physical body or brain. It's amazing. I have many of these cases, too, because they're really not rare. It's just that doctors are reluctant because they're concerned of their reputation.
Of course. Of course they are. Is there any indication in all the regressions that you have done, Doctor, that there is a staging area, a waiting area, a period of time, and we use the word time where there may not be a reference for time once you're outside your physical body, but is there any sense that there's a waiting period between lives?
Yes, there seems to be. One of the strong and recurrent themes is that we have this life review, I'm sure you've heard this before, where we go over our lives and how we affected people, what did we do, how did we act, what did we learn, did we accomplish the lessons, and then there's some progress, some learning on the other side, and then we come back here. Now, the time can vary from a day, an hour, to more than a century, depending on the needs of the soul to learn,
that
who it's coming back with.
Doctor, hold on. We're at the top of the hour. It goes quickly. Dr. Brian L. Weiss is my guest, very credentialed, studying this for many, many years. We're talking about reincarnation. I'm Art Bell.
You're listening to Art Bell Somewhere in Time, tonight featuring a replay of Coast to Coast AM from March 15th, 2002.
A highwayman along the coast roads I did ride, with sword and pistol by my side. Many a young maid lost her baubles to my trade. Many a soldier shed his lifeblood on my blade. The bastards hung me in the spring of 25. But I am still alive.
I was a sailor. I was born upon the tide. With the sea I did abide. I sailed a schooner around the Horn of Mexico. I went aloft and furled the mainsail in a blow. And when the yards broke off, they said that I got killed. But I'm living still. I was a dam builder across a river deep and wide, where steel and water did collide. A place called Boulder on the Wild Colorado. I slipped and fell into the wet concrete below. They buried me.
You're listening to Art Bell Somewhere in Time on Premier Radio Networks. Tonight, an encore presentation of Coast to Coast AM from March 15th, 2002.
We're about to take calls for Dr. Brian Weiss. Somebody passed past me and says, hey, Art, stop talking about that woman with a aneurysm, Pam Reynolds, will you please? You mention her on nearly every show. I'm tired of her already. Why do you idolize her? I don't idolize her. Roy in Alabama. I was profoundly affected by her. So I don't idolize her. And I will continue to mention and think of her, I'm sure, until I come up with some sort of answer to what happened to Pam Reynolds. It's right there with what we're talking about tonight, you know. It's too important. Just like this record.
Streamlink. The audio subscription service of Coast to Coast AM has a new name, Coast Insider. You'll still get all the same great features for the same low price, just 15 cents a day when you sign up for 1 year. The package includes podcasting, which offers the convenience of having shows downloaded automatically to your computer or MP3 player and the iPhone app with live and on-demand programs. You'll also get our amazing download library of 3 full years of shows. Just think. As a new subscriber, over 1,000 shows will be available for you to collect, enjoy, and listen to at your leisure. Plus, you'll get streamed and on-demand broadcasts of Art Bell's Somewhere in Time shows and 2 weekly classics. And as a member, you'll have access to our monthly live chat sessions with George Norrie and special guests. If you're a fan of Coast, you won't want to be without Coast Insider. Visit coasttocoastam.com to sign up today. Looking for the truth? You'll find it on Coast to Coast AM with George Norrie.
I really believe that my role is to inform people, to try to bring them the truth. Yes, this is a program where we have some fun, and sometimes it's very, very unusual and strange. but I want them to understand what's happening in the world around them, whether it's climate change, economy, war, and the reasons for all these things. So that's what I think my mission is.
You're listening to Art Bell, Somewhere in Time, on Premier Radio Networks. Tonight's an encore presentation of Coast to Coast AM from March 15th, 2002.
Well, all right, back now to Dr. Weiss, and somebody asks, Doctor, have you ever regressed yourself? That's a very interesting question to ask. Have you used your own CD, or do you not at this point require a CD? Have you done it, or have you not?
I have, and I've had, in the beginning, other people doing it to me, because that was my model. This was even before the CDs. So I've had several experiences myself, 8 or 9, and they were very interesting to me.
What kind of result?
And it took me a while, too, I should say that. It took, I was practicing, meditating, and trying to self-hypnosis, because really all hypnosis is self-hypnosis. It's just concentration in the relaxed state. My first experience happened during a regression. It was very visual and vivid to me. It was myself as an ancient priest, and now I'm watching this. Again, as we talked about in the beginning, you can watch it from a detached perspective at the same time you're experiencing it.
That's probably the safer of the beginning alternatives.
It is, and it is very safe. Art, you can always detach. You can always watch from this kind of distant perspective. You can do it without emotion if you want. You have all of these options. So I was watching myself and also being in this person's body at the same time as an ancient priest, and I think it was Assyrian Babylonian time, because it was a kind of odd geometric building. I don't remember the name of these buildings, but they were sloping up sides, flat on the bottom and top, different levels, stairs going up the middle. And I was a very powerful priest in that time. I had the ear of the royal family if I wanted, but I was misusing the position for more power and greed and sex and things like that instead of teaching, well, like today, not me today, but others today.
Yes.
And instead of teaching about spiritual things. So there was kind of a waste in that, and I was somewhat
disappointed.
Sad. Yeah, disappointed. And I kept hearing the word ziggurat in my head. Ziggurat. I didn't know that word consciously when I was hearing it. Later on, I looked it up, and that is the name for this type of geometric building. The Hanging Gardens of Babylon is an example of a ziggurat.
Oh, it must be really something to confirm something like that for yourself.
Yes. In my first experience, I had that opportunity to confirm, so that was more powerful for me. And that was my first experience, and I think that I've had many lives in different religions, different areas of the world. I'm Jewish in this life, but I had a powerful life in France several centuries ago it wasn't France, it was Scotland. I didn't even know. It was Europe somewhere, and later on I found out it was Scotland, as a Catholic priest who was tortured and killed for teaching heretical subjects, such as we're talking about tonight.
Has this now driven you to Judaism and Islam?
I don't know. It's driven me to psychiatry. That's what's happened.
Uh-huh.
The priest of the 20th century.
How has this affected your religious whole attitude about religion?
Well, it's a good question, too. I'm still Jewish. I agree with the Dalai Lama. He said, stay in your religion. You're comfortable with it. You don't need to change. They all go to the same place anyway.
Yeah.
Except that I'm much more eclectic now. I, as a matter of fact, the last two chapters of Messages from the Masters, the book before Mirrors of Time, is all about religions, because I started looking at religions and I found so many similarities that in the last two chapters there, I just took quotes from 5 or 6 of the largest and most well-known religions and compared them.
Oh, they're so similar.
So similar. It's all about love and forgiveness and nonviolence and compassion, except that we don't act that way.
No, of course not.
So So I'm much more eclectic now. I see the good, I see the love, I see the spirituality in all religions at the deeper level.
But do you begin to no longer see the relevance in specific religion?
I think personally. Yeah. No, I think Judaism is very, very mystical. I didn't know about Kabbalah and that aspect of Judaism, so I find pathways there. But I find it in Buddhism, and I studied that. I find it in Catholicism, which is filled with love, and I find it in Islam when I read the Sufi mystic Rumi and people like that. It's in all religions. It's really all the same. So I'm not a religious person now. I would say I'm a more spiritual person.
Mm-hmm.
There's a quote that I love. It's from Teilhard de Chardin. He said that we are not human beings having a spiritual experience here, but instead we are spiritual beings having a human experience.
Yes.
It really captures the nuance.
All right. Listen, I have some audience that would love to talk to you.
Great.
So how about it? Okay, then good. Here we go. First time caller line, you're on the air with Dr. Brian L. Weiss. Hi.
Good morning.
Good morning, sir.
This is John in Wisconsin. I'm probably like a million other souls out there that we all worry about our immortal soul, where we're going to, you know, burn in hell or go to the pearly gates.
Mm-hmm.
And this suggestion of reincarnation, you know, you keep coming back to get it right. That's kind of nice, kind of warm and fuzzy. But I would come close to believing that it's. I've even heard, read about these what you call genetic or DNA ghost memories from atomic structures from just like you said, that guy that got a heart transplant, that the structure of that heart somehow causing
memories. Yes.
Well, the thing that kind of scares me is I've had general anesthesia twice for some surgery.
Sure.
And it was instantaneous, and you would think that during that, when they, I've read one place that you actually brainwaves go flat because they put you all the way under. You know, they don't want you to, you know. And it was instantaneous. In other words, they say count to 1 to 5, and you're set there on 4. And then you're fixing to say 5, and they said, "Mr. Williams, can you move?" And I said, "You know, you want to say, sure, I can move." And
but you can't.
Well, you're waking up. It's been happened. You didn't even miss one beat. You see what I'm saying?
Yeah, you're in the recovery room.
You're in the recovery room.
That's right.
They said they give you the injection to put you to sleep, and they say count to 5, and you're sitting there physically counting 1, 2, 3, 4, and they said, "Mr. Williams, can you hear me?" And I said, "Sure, I can hear you standing right here." And you look around, you're in a different room, and it's all done. And
well,
wasn't no dream, wasn't no floating. How come you don't get no floating at that time?
All right, it's a perfectly fair question.
Yes.
As a matter of fact, the out-of-body experiences, Dr. Weiss, and the casual observations from the ceiling and all that, they're the exception, not the rule.
Right.
Well, any idea why?
No, it's just that's the way it is. I mean, we're still studying the phenomenology of it. We're describing these events. We don't know why some people have out-of-body experiences, like the woman on 48 Hours or the blind diabetic woman that I talked about, and others don't. But anesthesia, drugs, could suppress some of these experiences, too, in some people. They don't eliminate the brainwaves or the respirations. They're just brought down.
Right.
You weren't as deep. You just didn't have a memory for it because that's what the drugs do. Nevertheless, there's a great deal of evidence that people can still hear conversations and respond to that. I had a patient who was having vocal cord surgery, and she was under general anesthesia, and she overheard the anesthesiologist and the surgeon talking about the possibility that her throat might swell from as a result of this surgery, and she woke up panicked in the recovery room, panicked that her throat might swell and she wouldn't be able to breathe. So she heard that conversation. But why she did and you didn't, I don't know that. We don't know why some patients and not others.
But you would understand if that is his only frame of reference?
Sure. Sure. But the important thing, I think, for all of us, for me too, is to keep an open mind. Because we didn't have the experience ourselves doesn't mean that it doesn't exist.
Now, I wonder if it has anything to do with your expectations. For example, I recall having my wisdom teeth removed, and I don't like dentists. Doctor, I don't like them at all.
Right.
And they put me under for that, of course. And the next thing I remember is waking up groggy, and I would not have wanted to experience that. In fact, my expectation was looking forward to total oblivion while this was done.
Yes, and that's the subconscious mind, and the power of the subconscious mind, which is extremely strong, is that your intention or your expectation will have a large determining factor in your experience.
On the other hand, I have this incredible urge to travel in time. I have been fascinated with the concept of time travel for so long, and what you describe, in some instances, is time travel.
Yes, yes, it really is.
It's kind of like the movie Somewhere in Time, I mean, where you can reach a level of concentration within when you can actually put yourself in a different place in a different time, immerse yourself into it to the degree that it approaches the reality we now see.
Yes, it really does work that way, and I'm going to say it again. It's very safe. It's very safe. You can't get stuck because it's actually time travel in a memory sense, along some sort of continuum. You can't get stuck in the past. It never happens.
Well,
there really is no danger.
Well, you say there's no danger and never happens, yet we have mental hospitals full of people who are mentally ill, or at least we view them as mentally ill. Now, how can you know for sure that some of them didn't have some sort of experience from which they did not recover?
Oh, that's entirely a possibility. They're having these experiences without regression, without...
Or maybe they don't want to recover. Maybe they have immersed themselves someplace, mm-hmm. and they don't want to come back.
That's a possibility, too. Or they've chosen to come here in some with that kind of impairment to learn some other lesson, like how to receive love, or perhaps they were abusive of the mentally ill in another life, and now they have to experience it themselves to know, hey, this is not something to be abused. These
also,
people are suffering.
Also a possibility. Okay. Wild card line, you're on the air with Dr. Weiss. Good morning.
Good morning, gentlemen.
Hi.
This is Kat from near San Francisco.
Yes, sir.
One of your fast blasts and or faxes, either this week or last week, brought up a subject which runs right along this line, but it didn't contain one caveat, which I would like to add. The message had to do with a stage hypnotist who had a bunch of children up on the stage, mm-hmm. and for some reason, he asked them to sing the Martian national anthem, they did a foreign language nobody had ever heard before. However, the caveat is, upon having it sung in the foreign language, they should also re-sing it in English so you could get a translation.
Well,
have you considered
that's a lot to wish for. Actually, he's right. That did happen. Now, I don't know what to make of it. How could several children be instructed under hypnotic suggestion to sing the Martian national anthem and all begin simultaneously in a language nobody ever heard start to sing?
No, that's fascinating. I didn't know about that. But first thing I would do is take a tape of that and go to the linguistics department to see if it's similar to any languages current or extinct.
And if they were to shrug their shoulders?
Well, then you'd have to explore even in another way.
East of the Rockies, you're on the air with Dr. Weiss. Good morning.
Carol Ann?
Yes.
London, Ontario?
Oh, Canada, yes.
Yes. My mother's been listening to you for years.
Yes, ma'am.
And I've been listening to you for the past few weeks. And out of 10, I give you 11. I laugh it up like a little kitten.
Oh, that's very kind. Thank you.
I never heard the woman's story before, so I thoroughly enjoyed it. I could listen to you till the cows come home.
Thank you.
Anyway, to get to my question, I just wondering, how do you get the CD?
Oh, the CD. Well, there's a friendly question.
And we had never met before. No, I'm kidding. The CD is in the new book, Mirrors of Time.
Oh.
It's in my new book, and that you can order it right through Art Bell's website.
And it goes over to Amazon.com, I'm sure, where they discount all like crazy. I don't know how they stay in business. But so the CD is part of the book?
Yes, it's right in the book.
All right, so you get the instruction and the CD all in one. Would you try it, ma'am?
Oh, definitely, yes. I have difficulty relaxing 100%, and when he said about relaxing, definitely.
This one, yes, it starts out by relaxing the muscles, the body. This is good in general in that sense because we carry around so much tension, even before it gets into the regression part.
You're putting somebody under?
Yes, in a light way.
It's
hypnosis again as the real definition of hypnosis, which is relaxed, focused concentration. So that, to give you an example, when you're driving your car and you forget the last few blocks, that's hypnosis. Or when you're so absorbed in a good movie that you're not hearing the person eating popcorn next to you, that's hypnosis.
Mm-hmm.
It's really just that focusing in a relaxed state.
But there are many levels of
this,
right? And you attempt to get to a level, obviously, beyond the ignoring popcorn.
Yes, a little bit beyond that, but not to the singing the Martian national anthem level. That's a bit deeper.
How long have you been hypnotizing?
Well, I learned hypnosis as an intern when I was at Bellevue Hospital in New York in 1970.
So a long time.
32 years.
32 years. All right, doctor, hold on. We are once again at the bottom of the hour. It does go quickly, doesn't it? Good morning. This is something to mentally chew on for a while, I think. I'm Art Bell, and this is Coast to Coast AM.
You're listening to Art Bell, Somewhere in Time, on Premier Radio Networks. Tonight, an encore presentation of Coast to Coast AM from March 15th, 2002.
I've got so much love and needing you so. My love for you, I'll never let go. I've got so much love. All I want is to hold. Let me show.
Somewhere in Time, tonight featuring a replay of Coast to Coast AM from March 15th, 2002.
Dr. Brian Weiss is my guest, and we're talking about reincarnation. I've got a really, really good question, and several of you, no doubt, trying to get through here to ask your own. Coming right up.
Now we take you back to the night of March 15th, 2002. On Art Bell, Somewhere in Time.
Once again, back to Dr. Brian Weiss. Doctor, I don't know if you watch NYPD Blue or not, ever. There's a character in it named Andy Sipowicz. He's a detective. He's a perpetually grumpy, lovable, but horrendously grumpy guy. And even nasty at times. And the question is, from somebody down in Texas, temperament. In other words, as we reincarnate, do we notice improvements in temperament, improvements in our spiritual nature, or does it sometimes fluctuate the other way? Are we always headed toward perfection, or do we take an occasional two or three steps to the rear in a lifetime?
Well, there's where the free will comes in. You cannot accomplish your lessons. You have the free choice to not do that. I find in this research that people are learning many different lessons, not all of them in the same lifetime. They may be learning about patience. They may be learning about nonviolence. It might be relationships. It might be compassion. It might be something else, not being greedy. And they may not learn all the lessons equally. So they may be mastering one, say patience, but not mastering greed or violence. So it may look like we're going backwards from time to time, but overall the progress is really forward.
Okay. All right. East of the Rockies, you're on the air with Dr. Brian Weiss. Where are you, please? Hello?
Was that east of the Rockies?
That's you, yes.
Okay, I didn't hear the east.
Yes.
I'm Tom in Lafayette, Indiana.
Yes,
I'm
sir.
Listening on WLS. Matthew Alpert said there's a God part of the brain, and like 92% of the people have to believe in God, basically, and 8% pretty much have to not believe in God.
Yes.
And would it be possible, since, you know, he said some people do and some people don't, that some people have, like, been here a long time and reincarnate, and some people showed up 6,000 years ago and don't reincarnate?
That's a good question. Doctor?
Well, I don't know about the part of the brain where
right,
I would...
I'll talk to you about that in a moment. No, go ahead and answer his question.
Yeah, but it seems to me that in doing... Again, I'm just talking about my own research, that there are new souls coming to this place because that's how the numbers fit, so they must be coming from somewhere else. There seem to be, again, this is some of the strange part, there were several large migrations of physical bodies to this planet long time ago in the past. This is what my patients tell me. I don't know much about this either, but certain discrete migrations, large-scale migrations. We all reincarnate, though, once we're here. Once you're here, let me tell you about an OBGYN physician that I saw, a very prominent OBGYN doctor in Miami, and very well-known, very left-brain, down-grounded. And she came in and had this unusual regression of crash landing almost, well, being in a scout ship maybe 100,000 years ago on the Australian continent and interacting with the Aborigines who were there at that time, and then having to stay on this planet because there was karma now, or there was a debt to pay, and she entered the reincarnation cycle at that point and has been here ever since. And she described this other world that I had really didn't have a frame of reference for. And her father, independently having a regression in a different part of the country, came up with some same memories of that other world.
Oh, really?
So this is that strange stuff. There's much more to life than meets the eye.
So there is. Since you are a psychiatrist, it's an unusual opportunity for me to run this by you. There is a man named Matthew Alpert that I've interviewed a few times. And he makes a kind of an interesting case that for most humans, the greatest fear we have is of death. And I think that's probably a fair assumption.
Yes.
Okay, fine. Operating from that point then, he makes the case that the human brain, in an effort to protect itself from that fear, a natural thing for our brain to try and do, demands that we worship, demands that we concoct a god, whether it be the sun, the moon, the god of the Bible, Muhammad, whatever. He makes his case by saying you even go down into untouched parts of the Amazon or wherever and you find these untouched groups of people, and sure as can be, they worship something. So he makes the case that perhaps there is not a God. Perhaps it is just our brain doing what our brain naturally does to contend with something it cannot otherwise contend with. What do you think of that?
Well, of course, that's a hypothesis. It would be a difficult one to prove, because belief in God and in a higher power exists in all cultures throughout the world.
Yes, that's his case.
Does not mean that there is no God.
No, it doesn't mean that.
It's an interesting hypothesis, but I think there's more to it because...
I hope so.
Yes, because of this research, and you may not necessarily have to use the word God. You can use energy or love or something like that, because I no longer think of God as an old man, for example, sitting on a cloud, because so many of my patients have told me about God being an energy that's in every cell, every atom, every subatomic particle, every piece of our being is really God.
But still, there would be some psychiatric support for such a position, would there?
Oh, yes, yes. Even Freud has talked about the need to develop God-like figures as a projection and a protection at the same time. And even he talked about, you know, parents standing over the crib as we're infants, seemingly omnipotent. And these would be like godlike projections, of course.
Of course, yes. All right. West of the Rockies, you're on the air with Dr. Brian Weiss. Hello.
Hi, good morning.
I'm Jamie
from Spokane, Washington.
Okay.
Art, you and I have spent many really good nights together. Sorry, Ramona.
That's not a problem.
I am a student of hypnotherapy, and I have seen regressions, and I believe in it. And I have a theory, and I wonder if the doctor has heard it proposed before, that our lives are like an energy that is recorded like a radio or a TV signal. And at birth, maybe we tune into a signal and experience that as a memory, which could explain why we internalize others' traumas as our own and could possibly explain a transplant patient's memory. What do you think?
Well, there's so many theories, and one other is that we can know everything, all there is, that every thought, every event is somehow impressed on an ether or an electrical wave, that thoughts are reality. Thoughts have a substance, and we can tap into them. The great American psychic Edgar Cayce is said to have done that, and, you know, just tapping into this, whatever you want to call it, Jung called it the collective unconscious. Edgar Cayce called it the Akashic Records. The name, again, doesn't matter. But perhaps we know everything. This would be an interesting argument also. So what you're saying, I think, has some validity, that everything is energy. And we know that this is the case.
All right. Here's one that's always bothered me, and I, with regard to reincarnation, it's the following. If the goal of reincarnation is to strive toward perfection, to improve, then why not set it up? Why didn't the Maker set it up so that we have conscious memories of prior lives, which would make the entire process ever so much easier, it would seem? Either that, or then I might ask, perhaps it is not intended at all, for very good reasons, that we understand about our prior lives. How do you deal with that?
Yeah, no, that's a great question. I've thought about this also. I think that this is my again, coming just from my work and from my thinking about this, that we're here as a kind of school and a kind of test to see, have we really learned the lessons? And every culture has some sort of reason why we forget our past lives, whether it's crossing the river Styx in the ancient Greek cultures, the Japanese have reasons, touching the little part of your face that between the nose and the upper lip. This is another way of why do we forget our past lives? And I think it's to see, did we really learn the lessons? For example, if you were nonviolent now because you remember being punished for it after a pretty miserable, violent 14th century lifetime, and you want to avoid that punishment, that's not really learning the lesson. But if you're violent because in your heart, somehow the knowledge, the learning has gotten into the depth of your being, into your heart. If you're nonviolent because in your heart you know that spiritual beings are not violent, that it's against your nature to be violent, then you've really learned the lesson. And I think it's that. Otherwise, you know, we're trying to read into the, quote, mind of God.
Yes.
And maybe God doesn't have a mind that we can conceptualize or understand. Maybe it's so far beyond what we can even begin to conceptualize. We want reasons.
It just seems that this process of a progression would be so much easier with memories and lessons learned in place. I mean, look how much wiser we are at 50 or 60 or 70 years of age than we were at 19.
Yes, you're absolutely right. And it leads even then to the next question, why did God make us at all? What does God need us here for? And that kind of thing. It's, again, in giving motives.
He's obviously got a sense of humor.
Yes, I think so. Absolutely.
All right, first time caller line, you're on the air with Dr. Brian Weiss. Hello.
How's it going?
It's going.
All right, well, I have a couple questions I'd like to ask him. I guess, first of all, I'm finding a few contradictions between what you're talking about, and I would just like to know where you place mankind in the chain cycle of life. Do you believe that we are developed from it, like evolved in it, or are we the spiritual beings in need of learning lessons? Where do you place us?
Are you asking whether it's evolution or creation?
Well, in a sense, where does...
Yeah. Okay. Doctor?
Yeah, I think it's both. I think there are two lines of evolution. The physical line, the Darwinian line that we know so well and the scientists have documented, and the spiritual line that isn't coming through the body and through the chromosomes. And what happens around the time of conception is that the soul enters the body more or less, and it's completed around the time of birth. But the soul is not the body. And that's the distinction. So there are two lines of evolution, the physical and then the evolution of the soul. They're not the same thing.
They're not the same thing.
No.
We are not connected to our souls? Like how
we are the
soul. What is our being in relation to our spiritual entity then?
Well, think of it like a car and a driver.
Right.
The soul is the driver, you.
Right.
The body is the car.
Uh-huh.
Now you have to maintain it because it takes you around and it's important. But when the car wears out, you get out of it, and you get a new car.
Why do you not have people regressing into ape life, then, if our bodies are evolved?
Oh, now that's a very interesting question. As you continue to take somebody back, would you not begin to pass through the evolutionary levels?
You get into I don't know if it's Australopithecus or that kind of thing, some ancient cave-like people, but again, the memories are not necessarily of being in an animal body, although I think that animals have souls too. The evolutionary lines seem to be different, or we don't seem to remember the animal lives. Maybe that's the answer to that one too.
Maybe as human beings we have no reference for memories of that sort.
Exactly.
Yeah.
But it's not through the genetic line. These regressions and past life memories are through the spiritual or soul line. So it doesn't go through the chromosomes. That's why you don't necessarily get chimps or dinosaur memories or wherever we evolved from.
Good. I wouldn't want to remember being a T-Rex or something.
Right.
Anyway, wild card line, you're on the air with Dr. Weiss. Hello.
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 Yes, this is Saul from Los Angeles.
Yes, Saul.
I have a couple of questions. Number one, I'd like to ask your guest, I have always had the feeling that the innermost mind is all-powerful. I kind of believe that. I've been trying to get in there, and I can't seem to. The door seems to be locked. I don't know.
It's practice. Just keep practicing meditation or relaxation. It takes time.
Yes, I've been at it for about 10 years.
Well, you're going to make progress. Your body will relax. You're getting muscular control. You're quieting your mind. Try not to get frustrated, and so I'll just keep practicing. It may come any day. I don't know. You have this, this breakthrough.
Do you believe that the mind, that the innermost being, is all-powerful?
I think the subconscious mind is very powerful. We know this in the research in the mind-body connection, how the mind controls the immune system, the health of the body, how stress can damage the body. So I agree with you. It's extremely powerful.
Somebody once taught me, Doctor, kind of a mild form of this, and I use it all the time, and maybe some of my audience can use it too, and maybe you can verify it works, because it does work. I'm a person who has very strange sleeping habits. When you do this kind of program, you know, you sleep twice a day, in the morning and then again in late afternoon, evening, in order to get a little nap before the program. And I've learned, you know, having a terrible time getting to sleep. I mean, terrible time. And I learned that someone once told me, try this, Art. Relax your finger. Then relax your hand. And then relax your arm. And then relax your leg. And then relax your other leg. And just do it piece by piece. And it actually works. You can feel the tension leave them. And by the time you're done running around your body, relaxing this part and that, guess what? You're asleep.
Absolutely. It works. That's a relaxation. And what happens is as you relax your body, as you let go of muscle tension and relax all of your muscles one by one, it's called a progressive relaxation. You will fall asleep because as you reach a certain point of relaxation, that's when sleep occurs. So it's a very, it's an excellent way of falling asleep. It's very safe. It's wonderful.
So there is something to it.
Absolutely. This is the progressive relaxation, and I think if everybody did that, they'd feel better. We walk around. It's not just falling asleep. It's good for your body in many other ways, too, reducing blood pressure, reducing you know, adrenaline levels and cortisol levels. It's very healthy to periodically just clear your body and relax the muscles, get back to a baseline state of peacefulness and relaxation.
You know what, on that note, my friend, we have done the show.
Wow.
Just whoosh like that. What a pleasure. Let's not wait another decade.
No. No, thank you so much for the opportunity.
Thank you. I'm sure you're going to have many, many orders of your book with the CD.
Well, thank you. The main thing, though, is to reach people and to teach and get and to stimulate their minds. And you do that, so this is a great show. I enjoyed it tremendously.
Thank you, Dr. Weiss.
Thank you, Art.
Good night.
Good night.
All right, well, here's a song that the beautiful Crystal Gayle sang for me. I was so honored, and it fits so well. Ta-ta.
In the desert, shooting stars across the sky. This magical journey will take us on a ride, filled with the longing, searching for the truth. Will we make it to tomorrow? Will the sun shine on you? Midnight in the desert.
We